Hello, and welcome to the Scotchcast. My name is Soccer Festinic, and joining me today is Nubarama.
Cool!
Stop that. Seriously, that is so freaky. You'll find out more about that in a second. Durin is also joining me today.
I'm so glad I don't know what that means.
Yeah, you will. You will. And you will. Shinboy 630.
Wait, this isn't the Orange Crush cast? Because that's what I'm drinking.
Why?
Because it's good?
I've never gotten into Orange Crush.
So I'm not drinking scotch, but I am at least drinking something this time.
What are you drinking?
I'm drinking, I'm not sure how to pronounce it. It's like Bullet or Bullite. It's a bourbon.
Doubleton, what's your thoughts on bourbon?
It's pretty good.
I don't know. I can't. So bourbon is a brown liquor, right?
Yeah.
I've never been into the brown liquors. Like, I know this is called the Scotch Cast, but we've also had the discussion before as to why it's called the Scotch Cast. I have no real reasoning aside from the fact I like the name. For me, it's about the clear liquor.
Last time we tried to do a podcast with someone drunk, Durin,
it was one of the best episodes we've ever done.
It also involves something orange flavored, much like what I am drinking.
That was fantastic. We need to do that again. We need not everyone to
no.
get dressed. Just Durin.
For my
Durin's
sake, we do not need to do that again.
Hammered on the air.
Like what we discussed earlier, coming up in a little while, there will be adult beverages involved with that.
Should we be talking about that, or should we not talk about that?
I'll mention it at the end. Okay. So it gives incentive for people to listen to this damn thing all the way through.
Oh, I've written it down. So speaking of people who've listened to the whole thing all the way through, we need to do shout-outs for Zach Hammondry, Charles Poitras, or Poitras? I don't know.
Should we really be giving out full names?
And these are the Twitter handles.
It's the internet.
These are formal handles. Oh.
And they didn't say anything. They didn't say, like, oh, and don't call me by this handle.
Durin, if we were trying to not do full names, we're a little bit late for that because we've already said two of the members here full names.
Have we? Who?
You called me out.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I definitely called you out.
And I'm the real
I mean, that
Ed
is a
Park
name worth calling out. Let's be fair here.
Yeah. And Andre, Kevin, Court are the three guys who messaged us with Turkey Noob after last week's four-hour ridiculous show. All about Guild Wars 2. Like, almost all about Guild Wars 2. That was one of the craziest shows we've ever done. Thankfully, this week we're not aiming that high / long, etc., etc.
Actually got a nose.
Would you call it high? Call it aiming high? I mean, do we ever aim high?
We've never aimed high.
3.5-star rated podcast?
Well, we've only aimed high once, which was probably the developer interview.
If the reviews are to be believed, this is the worst podcast of all time.
But I think that makes it the best podcast of all time.
The sound quality is supposedly okay. Well, it used to be okay when I cared. Now we're doing this stuff
over
Skype.
It's all those other Guild Wars 2 podcasts that are, you know, afraid of our influence, our growing influence in the Guild Wars 2 podcast sector.
Clearly.
You know, I can understand.
But this is an episode of the Scotchcast instead. So let's move on to what we've been playing, I guess. Me and Noob will probably go first.
You want to go first, or you want to save this for last?
No, we should go first because I
want
to get the
podcast.
Because
we want people to at least listen to this podcast for a little bit.
Wait, you're talking over each other. What was that, Durin?
I said I don't know that I have enough liquor in me to actually like listen to you guys talk about this yet.
Okay, fine. All right, sure. That's a good argument, Durin. What you been playing?
So I know this is the Scotchcast, but I've been mostly playing Guild Wars 2.
Really? That's right.
I
have a bone to pick with you, Durin.
Okay.
What, playing a game he enjoys?
No. Well, yes. So I opened his Steam account recently, and after firmly talking to you about the many positives of DMC Devil May Cry, I opened up your Steam account, and I see it's still at 2 hours, and I just want to shake my head at you, because how are you not playing more of that game? God damn.
Partly because the way that I am playing that game is a level at a time.
Right.
Like, I will play a level, and then I will put it down, and I'll go play something else. I'm enjoying it that way. I am genuinely enjoying the game.
Okay.
So
you have progressed beyond the first level?
Yeah, I've gotten to the point of having both. Last time we talked about it, like, I'd gotten, I think,
the 2 powers.
Like, I had both angel and demon stuff already.
Right, but did you go past there? I didn't think so.
No.
Anyway, what have you? So you're playing Guild Wars 2. What have you been doing in Guild Wars 2? I want to just touch on that and move on.
So I've decided to take the plunge and am actively working towards my legendary now.
Okay.
Life decision.
Yeah.
I have gone the opposite and just said balls to it.
High five. Yeah, I'm with Thurbleton. Thank you.
But Shinboy, who has his legendary.
This was my thinking behind it, because
okay.
Guild Wars 2 is a game with no real end game. There is no progression rating. There's none of that
from
at all.
A vertical progression standpoint. Yes. Yeah.
So at the end game, you kind of have some decisions to make. Like either you had the love route and kind of make your progression through that, which is basically no progression at all, or you go the structured PvP route, which is a kind of parallel progression in a lot of ways to dungeoning, except with more raging, or you go the PvE progression route, which is kind of get the stat gear you want, get the cosmetic gear you want, and then move on from there. And I've already done all that. Like I have.
Don't forget the costumes. Do you own all the costumes?
The stats I want. I have. No, I don't.
No,
because I.
What the
f- value
then?
My
no,
money.
You clearly haven't completed it. I've bought every single costume because I'm dedicated. Can you say the same, Durin? No, you can't.
Did you ever buy the chef?
Don't care
outfit?
About this game. Huh?
Did you ever buy the chef outfit?
Yeah, I ended up buying it recently. Oh,
okay. So I got all the you know, I have it. Most of the gear that I need at this point. So I was like, okay, well, I don't want to go, balls to the wall into structured. So what do I want to do next? And if I don't have some kind of a goal in mind, like I am very quickly going to fall out of the game.
Right.
So I decided like it made a lot of sense to go ahead and the legendary dagger looks really cool. I think I would like it. It fits really well with my fiery themed armor anyway.
Right.
So I decided that will be my next goal, to have something to work towards. What I'm worried about is now that Shin has gotten his and some other guild members have gotten theirs, they're noticing a severe lack of things to do in the game now.
Right.
I don't know. I was mentioning this the other day on Mumble. It's partially like, great, now I can do whatever I want, as in like not everything I'm doing in the game is like focused towards getting a legendary, which is both awesome and terrible, because I can just go for whatever.
Yeah.
But I have now so many options that I'm finding it hard to pick one.
Right. Because
you
already got
setting your goal as getting 5 million karma and not spending it.
So, no. that's the thing though, Shin Boy, is I feel like aside from going for a second legendary, like after you have the legendary and you have the stat armor you want, you have the cosmetic armor you want, PvE wise, like what else is there to do?
1 million
I had
goals.
In Guild Wars 1, I had 30 weapons with the same exact stats. Just gonna throw that out there.
Yeah, because it's all cosmetic at that point. I want to collect cosmetic gear all the time.
I had a collection of weapons in the first game that I would, just before a run, go, which one do I feel like using today?
So I guess what it comes down to is, like, given the fun that I'm having with my class and the abilities and everything, like, if that is enough to sustain the gameplay through, like, I'll probably find plenty to do then.
Yeah, because, like, I'm now that I have the legendary, I got the Predator, which is the rifle.
Right.
Now I'm just like, hey, there's a lot of bow skins that I like. I'm going to start collecting longbow skins, just going for, certain ones at a time. And I feel that's enough for me, at least.
Okay.
Just going for skins. Like, it's interesting because what I'm noticing now, because the other thing I've been doing is leveling my warrior. And the thing I've been noticing while I've been leveling him is other classes don't feel nearly as fun as the Ellie after playing so much of the Ellie. Like
indeed.
The warrior, I've been playing quite a bit of, my warrior, my guardian, my thief, and my necro, and they're just too inactive. There's a lot of just, hit a few buttons, maybe swap weapons if you need to, but kind of mostly don't want to in a lot of non-dungeon PvE.
The Ellie has a higher, just straight up APM, I guess you could say. For mm-hmm. than any other class, and that was their intention. In
which, as a
it.
StarCraft player, seems to fit you better.
Yeah, I think you picked the right class for you at the start, and so it does kind of make sense to the rest of them.
Because
for
and
me,
it's kind of
nothing
sad,
is as fun
like,
as warrior.
Yeah, like it's kind of sad for me though, because I apparently made that right choice in the beginning. Like that's cool that I did, because mm-hmm. it always
made
sucks
that
playing
right choice. Bullshit.
Well, it kind of sucks. The right choice for me is what I'm saying.
Right.
Okay. It kind of sucks, getting to the end of an MMO, like leveling a character all the way up, only to find out that you didn't like that class. I've done that in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So it's cool to have made that right choice for myself from the beginning. But at the same time, like I feel like for my personal playstyle, I have seen the best the game has to offer.
Yeah.
So alts are really, really hard for me to want to get into.
Right.
Yeah. See, I disagree. Like, I really like my warrior. I, like you, enjoy the activeness of switching attunements on the Ellie. I think Thief is pretty damn fun because you have to be on your toes or you're going to die.
Right.
I will say Thief is one of the classes I've probably been enjoying the most outside of my Ellie. And for that same reason, like, you do have to be on your toes constantly. And I feel like with other classes, that's not the case for the most part.
Guardian, hit enemy into wall, AFK.
God. I do want to try Engineer.
That's the best part.
I feel like that could potentially have some of the complexity that I enjoy out of Ellie's, though probably to a lesser extent because they don't really require the kit switching as often as Ellie's require the attunement swapping.
Also, they're not as good.
I've heard they're okay, at least for leveling. Like, they're probably not good for in-game PvE, but whatever.
Anyway. Nubarama.
You've also, according to Steam, you've also played Chivalry, Antichamber, and Rayplay. How is Rayplay?
Oh, I got a story about Chivalry.
Rayplay is a Steam game, so fuck you.
Yeah, I don't think...
You guys don't have Rayplay on Steam?
No.
Oh, can I jump in on this? Just like on the subject of Chivalry real fast?
Sure.
I was getting ready to go to a concert last night, and I was like just getting everything ready before doing my errands for the day, and I saw, it's like, oh, check PC Gamer's website. They posted a video that was just Screaming in Chivalry with Low Gravity was the title of it.
Oh, yeah.
Some of that effect.
That sounds like the best time in Chivalry.
And I was like, I don't know what this is. I'll click on it and watch it. And it was like 10 minutes. Like, really? It's like, that's that long of screaming? I watched the whole thing.
I was going to say, you missed all your errands, didn't you?
I should have.
Oh, that game is so great.
So,
is that game first person?
Yes, I believe it is.
Okay.
Wait a second. Okay. So what was in that video? What?
It was just as advertised. It was like all the maps, but with low gravity. So, like, imagine people leaping the size of, like...
So yeah. UT equivalent zero or low G.
Yeah, UT equivalent low gravity.
Yeah.
But and then just...
With swords, etc.
Yeah. And then constantly screaming. Because I don't know, like, Durin, you can answer this for me, because I haven't actually played Chivalry. So I've just seen awesome videos. So, when you're jumping, do you scream, or was that all players?
There was a
when you're charging.
Okay, so they were willingly screaming, and so it they picked the best frames to get all these shots done with, like, the sunset in the background, and you see either side just flying through the air, screaming in slow motion, and then they get next to each other and just like start slashing each other, and it was hilarious for 10 minutes straight. I couldn't stop watching. That sounds pretty funny.
That sounds pretty cool.
Oh man.
I don't know why that reminds me of, like, in Bad Company 2, when they did helicopter flamethrower battles.
Oh, that sounds awesome. That sounds pretty cool as well.
Yep.
Yeah, if it weren't for the really bad server list problem that game has, like, that game would be so fucking great. But it can be such a bitch getting into a game sometimes.
So many games have that issue where it's like, it's a really fun game, I love to play it, like Command & Conquer... Not a Command & Conquer. Company Heroes was like that, where it's like, I really liked it, but the way the multiplayer matching was set up, it just didn't feel comfortable to me.
Durin, you missed out on our PC Gaming Hub Chivalry tournament, dueling tournament.
Oh, man.
I should have told you about it. It was really interesting.
Speaking of which,
brackets of like 18 people or something like that.
Is there anything else you've been playing, Durin, or shall we move on?
There's one more... Wait, have I talked about Antichamber? Like, having finished it?
You have talked so much about it.
We've talked it on for two episodes.
Okay. Okay.
Right.
That is another Antichamber.
About the final. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, I talked about the end.
So the only other thing was the thing that we kind of all played. So I'll hold off on that until somebody else gets around.
Wait, there's something that you've all played?
You played too.
Oh, sure. I guess we could talk about it. I didn't even think of talking about that today. Anyway.
Okay. Well, I mean, yeah. Like, a bunch of us played Dungeonland together, and... That is a pretty all right game.
That is a pretty all right game.
They're by live review. I did actually tune in for like 5 minutes of the stream.
It's pretty
cool.
For a
game that's advertised as being cheaper than pizza, it's pretty fun for the price. It's pretty good.
Yeah, for anybody who's not familiar with what it is, it's essentially very Diablo-esque. It's kind of a, you know, a dungeon crawler type of looking game.
Yeah.
You have WASD controls, so it's not click to move or anything. You got, you know, left click and right click and Q and E for your
really
abilities.
Decent controller support.
Yeah, I played on a controller.
Controller support. And it basically is a three-player dungeon crawler, except that you can have a fourth player come in as the dungeon master, which gets more of like an RTS view, and gets like these cards for different events they can drop, whether it be like enemy drops, trap drops, event drops.
Think of it like just to fuck the players. Like, think of it as at the start of the match. So the three people play, like, there's wizard, mage, warrior, and thief, or whatever, rogue. It's like the three normal classes you expect from any RPG. And they pick between that pool, and you can have two mages or whatever. There's no, like, forced restrictions or anything there. And that kind of plays out as a normal dungeon crawler to some extent. It's the other side that I found, like, really interesting in that... Not that the first gameplay loop was, like, bad. I actually found the dungeon crawling quite competent and in a lot of ways a lot of fun. Especially stuff like... there's a lot of reward for playing cooperatively in that if one person picks up a health item, everyone gets healed. Everyone shares their gold. And I think everyone shares the amount of total life pool. Like, when someone dies, you drain, like, a heart.
So there are five hearts.
The team has five hearts, and that
I feel like I should also jump in and say, like, this is definitely a game that you need to play with friends, either through a voice comm or something.
Yeah.
If you're doing
They strictly say that on the loading screen.
Yeah, if you play it online by yourself, like, play the dungeon master mode and play it on, like, easy or very easy, because when you're doing just, like, you and your two friends versus a AI dungeon master,
yeah,
the easiest level of difficulty is hard.
Yeah, and you get your ass kicked if you've just come into the game green. Like, if you haven't unlocked anything, because there's perks, as you would somewhat expect nowadays, and different classes, so all the classes have evolutions. So if you come in with all the stock stuff, so the stuff you come out of the box. And to be clear, you don't have to pay for any of this with real life money. This is all
it's not a pay to win, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, it's all in game stuff.
When did this game come out?
Tail end of last year, I think.
Right.
Oh, okay. So it's been out for at least a little while.
Cool.
Yeah, I have a weird habit of playing games like 3 months after they've been released.
Nice.
That's okay. I have a weird habit of playing games about 3 years after the release.
So yeah, essentially, that part is all good. Like, the basic dungeon part of it, dungeon crawling part of it, is all solid. It's the other side of it that I found really interesting, which was, you think of it as you start off by creating a deck of cards as the dungeon master. It's a very small deck, maybe about 15 or 20 cards. And then every time, so when the game starts, you are the dungeon master, so you get to set down traps and so on and so forth. But what you can set down is based on what cards you're dealt. And you're dealt cards at the start of the game, and every time people go through a checkpoint. So, for example, the game starts, you're dealt five cards, and randomly chosen from your deck of cards, which is set at the start of the game. And then you can deal those cards out, essentially, or expend them, and that allows you to put down, like, a special monster, or, traps, or, like, turrets and stuff to stop people from, to mess with your dudes. And that's kind of what you're doing.
I think the main goal is obviously to try and kill them, but you want to try and get, the more damage you get, there's this thing that just overarches throughout all the level that is an evil meter. And the higher the evil meter goes, you can summon these really badass guys.
Yeah.
So say you have this deck, is there like any internal cooldown, or can you like say just spam all 20 at once at the beginning?
So you can't spam all 20 at once. You have a mana pool, essentially, and each one costs X number of mana orbs. Mm-hmm. Your mana orbs, you get more mana back over time. It seems like you get more when you're actually doing damage, or when your things are actually active.
Yeah.
From what I was looking at, like, when my things would actually hit you guys, I would actively see my mana go up.
Okay, cool.
Whereas when I was out of cards and out of mana and everything, my mana was going up incredibly slowly, which is why there were a lot of, like, pauses between what I was doing.
Yeah.
But also, you only get so many cards, and then, like, you get a new card every, like, 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
So if you just expend all of them at once, which there are times when you can.
Yeah.
If you're, say, full mana and everything, and they're fairly low-cost things.
Yeah.
You can expend them all in one room, but then the problem is, once they get past that room, assuming they do, you're going to be kind of useless until they hit another checkpoint.
Like, the next room and a half is going to be an easy breeze for them, because they're just dealing with the generic guys in there.
Yeah, who's normally in the dungeon. So,
and those are also dependent on like what cards you've played that will spawn those types of guys in general, as well as ones you can summon on their own.
And we all had a shot at playing the Dungeon Master. I think, Durin, did you get... You played Dungeon Master one round. Yeah. So me, Thurb, and Durin all played Dungeon Master, and at least for me, I really liked it. I liked playing Dungeon Master.
There was one thing that I think myself and I think Durin did a pretty good job compared to you, Cynic, and that was laughs per minute. Because one thing we haven't gone over
is this game
really loves special to button. Make,
it, it loves to make fun of the whole idea of the game.
Right.
And like it has like randomly generated names for each of the bad guys that the Dungeon Master can click on and see.
Yep.
And it has like it's the descriptions of all the bad guys are just like endearing and funny.
Yeah.
And when you're playing as the Dungeon Master, there is a button where you can cackle.
Yeah, so you hit this button on UI.
Evil laugh button.
Yeah, and everyone hears you cackle. And so these two, when they played, they used the button. Well, Thurbleton used the button pretty much all the time. He would just be mashing the laugh button. I played second Dungeon Master, and I was the like the extreme opposite, where I'd only hit it when I knew I'd done something particularly clever. Like one time, I put like an ice field down, and then put mines in the ice field, and then nuked the ice field after someone got trapped in it, and then I hit the laugh button. That's the kind of thing I do.
I pretty much hit the laugh button every time I drop the darkness on you guys.
Yeah, and so we played those first two rounds, and we were all, me and Thurbleton were relatively pretty much constricted to the original set of tools. But when the third round started, Durin had already gotten a bunch of gold, and that's the persistent currency used to unlock stuff in the game, which you can use on either Dungeon Master stuff or dungeon crawling stuff. And he was able to unlock stuff like crazy new traps that we hadn't seen before. So that was really interesting. And he used laughs pretty much in the middle between me and Thurb.
Yeah.
Definitely not as much as me.
You know, I would worry that like the game might lose its interest or not be interesting anymore once you've like kind of unlocked everything. But honestly, like because you're only allowed like say 15 cards, and there are so many unlocks for each different tier or whatever, like there's so many different combinations of things in this game you can possibly do as the Dungeon Master.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really see that being a reason for it getting old.
Yeah, I think that, especially since we were playing on easy and very easy, once we start unlocking more classes and that kind of stuff and being more badass and Dungeon Masters, I assume at harder difficulties, you definitely have like bigger, better monsters to throw at us and stuff. Possibly.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I was looking through some of the monster upgrades, and there are some beasts in there.
Yeah, so that could be really cool.
The initial one you got was just like, there's the default things, but then Durin was, he was the last one to play Dungeon Master, so he had actually accrued a lot of money playing as just a hero.
Mm-hmm.
And that you can spend it on either way back and forth. Mm-hmm. He got something that was basically a black
sphere
thing.
Yeah.
And you couldn't see anything that was inside as one of the heroes, and it was the scariest thing ever.
So it was a lot of fun for me to take one of the like the flying bird things, because you can also, as the Dungeon Master, you can choose to control any of your minions individually.
Which I never did.
I would actually drop a dark sphere, grab one of those these flying birds that shot laser beams out, and just hide inside of the dark sphere and just shoot them out at them constantly.
And it was cool because all of us played Dungeon Master in like incredibly different ways. Like for Thurbleton, he had the disadvantage of being the first one out, so we didn't quite know what we were doing, and we played it on very easy at the time, so perhaps it was a bit too easy for us. But he had like a pretty decent like constant small amount of battle or whatever, and then like small peaks throughout the entire thing, and then like he actually got to one of the special monsters by accruing enough points, so there was definitely a boss fight there. When I played through, how I do it is I never control the monsters specifically. I spend that time looking around the map for like tricky little spots. So I was like more of a tricky kind of character. So there wouldn't be much in terms of like constant battle. But when there was a fight, it would frequently go just all the way bad for everyone involved because I'd set something up just right. Or if I just fucked it up, then it could be really easy. And then Durin was kind of like, again, in between us in terms of like which way he was closer to. But you can play it either way. I never felt the need to control a monster directly as the Dungeon Master.
Yeah, I mean, the only bit of advice I would give somebody going into it as Dungeon Master is always be aware of where the next checkpoint is.
Absolutely.
Because again, if the heroes hit that checkpoint and you have not expended all of your cards, you lose those cards. You get a whole new set of cards then.
Yeah.
So you've lost some opportunities to do some damage to them, which is always important. Again, even if you're not killing them, because you're always raising that evil meter, it allows you to get kind of those insane things at the end.
Yeah.
Like the mob of invisible wizards I cast on you guys.
And some of it's pretty cool because I think you're zoomed out significantly further as the Dungeon Master. Mm-hmm. So there was parts where you can see where they're heading to, and you can see that there's like a check. There was, in one instance, there was a checkpoint, and the only thing on the other side of that checkpoint was a room with a chest in it. And we'd seen that before when Thurbleton played it. But so they kind of had the expectation of them going to that room, and because they're going to the checkpoint, us as the DM could like quickly put in a shitload of monsters, and that could be a really interesting fight around that chest. But for me, I saw that that room was like barely anything, so I let them go through. They walked in expecting something, they got nothing. So it was just like they walk in and nothing happens, and they get the checkpoint and they get the chest full of gold, and it's like still nothing's happening, and they leave out. But because I went through a checkpoint, I was able to use all those points elsewhere in the map because I knew where they'd have to go later, and that's where I tricked them.
Can I just say like I'm genuinely surprised it took that long for the phrase DM to be used?
Well, yeah.
Like, I was just sitting here waiting for someone to say it.
Yeah, I played a significant amount of Dungeons & Dragons in my life, let's just say.
I mean, that's not a bad thing.
Yeah,
I was just surprised it took that long.
Yeah, agreed.
In general, it was fun.
it was damn fun.
It was for the $10 cost of it, that is definitely something worth the price of it for admission.
Yeah.
And actually, if you have three other friends who want to play it, the 4-pack's only $30, so it's okay, like seven per person.
Yeah, Thurbleton totally took the hit of it. Like, I had no idea about this game, and I just got like a Steam gift from Thurb. I'm like, oh wow, that's full cool. So thanks to Thurb for that.
Yeah, definitely.
So Dura, anything else?
No, that's pretty much it.
All right, moving on. I guess we could go Thurbleton next. Any other than Dungeon Master Thurbleton?
What was it called? I mean, like,
it's not called Dungeon Master.
Dungeon Land.
All right.
You're going to it's a theme park that a Dungeon Master has made to kill all the people that have like previously gone through his dungeons that he's made in Dungeons and Dragons.
Welcome to
Dungeon Land. I'll kill you all now.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I like the art style and stuff. It's a pretty well put together game. Anything else?
Other than today, there's been a few things that I'm not allowed to talk about, other than to say that I am in the SimCity beta now as well.
Are you sure we're not allowed to talk about that? We're allowed to talk about SimCity.
I believe we can talk about it now. There's some people stream.
Exactly.
So, okay. Oh, yeah. We played that.
How is SimCity, guys? That.
I think Shinboy and Durin can contribute a lot more to it. I really enjoy it, but it's only like I'm just getting the opening taste of it, and it's been a long time since I played a SimCity game. So it's just like, this is fun. I don't know why.
Nice.
In this beta, they opened up like the multi-city stuff.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it's like so tedious and so worrisome all the time, but it is the most fun thing.
Multi-cities.
Yeah, multi-cities. Like, you have like the whole region and multiple cities in the region, and you zoom out and it shows like the main needs of all of your cities, and you have to manage like, oh man, this one needs more power, or this one has too much crime, and you're like constantly hopping back and forth. It's actually somewhat fast paced, I guess, but it's sort of strange to say for a SimCity game.
How are you managing to do all of that in an hour playtime?
Because I am a G at SimCity.
Because like, I'm just building a city in that hour.
You know, like, because I never turn it off the fastest speed.
Ah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that would do it.
Well, I'm only doing that for the beta so I can try and see as much as I can in an hour. Like, I wouldn't actually play like that.
So the thing that a lot of people have against it was that you can't really micromanage absolutely everything about your city. But it sounds like if you had to do this as well, that would just be completely, like, way too much.
Yeah, I mean, like, a lot of the stuff that they pulled out micromanaging. Well, like, for instance, in this one, you can't actually control where certain densities are built. That's all kind of determined by other factors. Though you do
it's determined by the roads.
Well, it's not just the roads. Like, for instance, if you want, let's say, medium density housing, you would, like, the roads are required, but you also need to have a certain property value for that area. And that property value is affected by the buildings that you drop as well. So, like, you do still have some control over that. The control is different than selecting a different shade of green now.
Yeah. Right.
So, it requires a bit
it's
more.
Like, it's like the easiest way that I found to control all of that was via, like, the park system, because parks are assigned different values. Okay, and those correspond to line values. Like, it's super easy if you want this to be like, okay, I want this to be my high end. You know, all the rich people live in this area. You drop a few like tier 3 parks there, and that's when you start seeing the mansions pop up in that area. Yeah. Stuff like that.
And it's just it's really smart how they do some of the stuff. Like, for instance, when I drive to school, it shows like an area of influence of the school, so you can kind of see who is actually capable of getting there. But the nice part is like, instead of having to drop like 7 schools in a small town just because of how your city is laid out, you can actually drop some fairly cheap school bus stops around, and that just increases the area of influence of that school.
Yep, and the same thing goes for
you only need more schools. You only need more schools for population reasons as opposed to area of influence, which is
yeah, and the same thing applies, as far as I can tell, with the limited stuff we have in the beta to mass transit with like the bus system, similar to the school buses. You can just drop more stops and the area changes. Obviously, you'll have to add more buses, otherwise things will get crowded, but yeah, it's the same thing.
It's a smart way for them to do it because like that stuff makes sense that way. But then the same rule does not apply to things like hospitals. If you drop a hospital, it doesn't matter how many ambulances you have, the further out away from that hospital they have to go, the longer it's going to take for them to actually get to the emergency, the more chance you're going to have of people dying. So you actually do want to have things like hospitals spread out a bit more.
Right.
It's actually pretty smart. The game's pretty okay.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. So that all aside, I heard that, Shinboy, you were attacked by some zombies.
Oh, yeah. I ended up quitting a game because I had 150 abandoned buildings due to a zombie attack.
Oh, wow.
It was unpleasant.
Wait, so are you guys going to buy the game straight up? Because I know I am.
I mean, once already bought the game.
Right. Nice. So I'm because the game comes out the day before my birthday. So
Everyone now knows Newbrom's birthday.
Aww.
Right. March 8th.
Newbrom, you need to get up on your microphone because you are way quiet.
March 8th.
That's
God.
Not while we're recording. Don't blow out the microphone.
My email is sexydfc@gmail.com.
That is totally an email. I bet that email address exists. Not necessarily yours.
It does now.
In the ocean, boy. So general stamp of approval on SimCity, which is entirely unexpected.
This beta is super buggy compared to the last one. Like, I've had it hang at loading screens a few times.
Okay.
I had to actually give up on it the first time I tried to load it up because it just wouldn't load my city. And just kept hanging up on the load screen to load
the city. Well, the thing is, if you can get past the loading screens and the not really connection issues, it's getting – if you can get it to work, it works great.
Are the cities stored locally or online?
Everything is stored online.
Ah, so that's why. That's probably why then, huh? Yeah. Man.
No, but
part about this game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it sounds like that's worth it.
And also,
there was a performance boost, at least that I noted. My card was running a few degrees cooler.
Okay.
So.
And also, Shinboy did note earlier, he sent me a message today that it has been confirmed the size of the cities.
I don't know about it's confirmed. Ryan Davis said it on his stream.
Confirmed by somebody who has played a different build of this game.
Okay.
That the size of the cities we are playing in this beta are not representative of the final size. So it sounds like the cities will be bigger at launch, which is definitely
basically to anybody who doesn't know about SimCity, or at least like knows of the game SimCity, but doesn't know a lot about the new version, is that there was some contention. It's like you're going to have a large region, but then inside that region, there's going to be small areas where you'll actually build your city and interact with it. And so people were worried about the size of that like interactable district of the large region. And
well, they were worried about specifically based on the size of that we were seeing in the beta.
Yeah.
There's also like the Great Works area, which I don't know if this was included in any how it was handled in the other SimCities. How were like all that stuff, like airports and stuff, handled?
They were just a part of your city.
Okay, because if you want to build like an international airport or something, it's in a separate site, or like a space center or something. It's on a separate site, and those are in this beta. Like if you zoom out to region view, you can see it. But I haven't like had enough money to build one yet, so I don't know how those work.
Right. Interesting. Anyway. Anything else, Shinboy?
I've been playing a whole lot of different games and not a whole lot of any of them individually.
All right, name them off. Let's go. What we've got here?
Antichamber.
Okay.
SimCity Beta.
Next.
Witcher 2.
All right.
BioShock.
Okay.
There's some other ones. There's some other ones that I'm forgetting.
Is it that
Limbo?
So you named a bunch of games there that
I like Limbo.
Are known for being quite engrossing, specifically like BioShock, Limbo, and Witcher 2. Any reason why you haven't stuck with them? Or
no, hang on. Let's narrow this down a little bit. Why the fuck didn't you just finish Limbo?
I had to go somewhere.
Ah, of course.
I had less time than I thought. I fully intended on finishing Limbo. But
which platform? PC?
That's like a two-hour game.
Right, PC.
Well, the thing is, I was in the middle of it, right? But I remembered most of everything that had happened, so I figured it's not worth it to restart.
Yep.
Especially since that spider is terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
yeah, it is.
And I finished like five chapters from where I was, like super quickly. And I was like, all right, I'm totally going to finish this game. Cross it off the list, add it to the list of games I beat this year. And then like I had to go somewhere. I don't remember what. I don't know where I had to go. The Witcher 2, I didn't want to start because I know I'm going to dive headlong into that game.
Okay.
So I want to wait till that has its own chunk of time, maybe after the end of March or in April when I'm not really playing anything else.
End of March sounds pretty busy, man.
End of March, SimCity.
Well, I'm going to be playing SimCity like all through March up until the 26th. Then BioShock Infinite comes out through that game.
Exactly. I don't see any time forward from here.
Well, I mean, beginning of April, though, is a real good time because there's like fucking nothing from there.
That's what I mean. That's what I mean. Right. And then summer. BioShock, I fully intended on playing a ton of BioShock tonight. And I was really getting into it. Like, I picked up where I left off, you know, previously and was really like into the atmosphere and everything.
Sure.
And then Windows was just like, hey, now's a good time to update, right? Okay, shutting down. So
asshole.
It bugged because BioShock is a very old game.
Okay.
At least by PC game standards, you know, with operating systems and such. So I had to do a whole bunch.
I'd still debate that, but sure. Go ahead.
I had to do a shit ton of work to like just to get it to work on Windows 8.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, really?
Oh, wait. Why are you in Windows 8? When did that happen? Oh, your new computer. Right.
Right?
I forgot you were in Windows 8 entirely. Okay,
I had to change a whole bunch of things just to get it so every time I closed the game, the audio didn't bug out to the point where I had to reboot to fix it.
Is that a Windows 8 thing or is that...
It's a BioShock didn't work well on PC when it came out. Like it didn't even... Like you have to do a lot of work to get it to run on Windows 7 even.
Okay. Interesting.
At least to get it to work well. Like there's a lot of FOV issues. There's a lot of, especially with the widescreen.
Yeah.
The way you would do the widescreen is you would just zoom in and cut off parts.
Cuts out the 4x3. Yeah.
Oh god, I forgot how bad like beginning of generation games
PC
were with widescreen stuff.
Fuck.
Well, specifically like beginning of Xbox 360 generation.
Yeah.
Like a lot of those games did not have proper widescreen
at all.
Yeah.
Oh man.
So what happened
like,
was
it feels like a previous generation at this point.
It does. The start of this generation was so long ago, dear
like
God.
I was in the middle of playing, okay, right? And it like the game didn't lock up; it just cut to black. And like I pressed like escape just to see what would happen, and it flashed green and then went back to black. I'm like, this isn't good.
What?
So what happened? My guess, anyway, is that Windows tried to close it to shut down.
Right.
And Shock didn't like that very much.
Okay.
So I just hit the reset button on my PC.
Yeah,
and when I started loading up, it was like configuring Windows updates. And I was like, it all makes sense.
Of course. And since then, you haven't been able to pick it back up. That's fair.
Then we started recording this.
Yeah,
so.
That's all cool. All right. I guess we can move on. Yeah. I know there's a game me and Noob want to talk about, but...
Should we talk about other games we've been
playing? Yeah, other games first. You first or me? I can go first.
You can go first.
I forgot to mention.
Which one?
I'm playing Kingdom Hearts 2.
Kingdom Hearts 2?
Yes.
If only Revan was here, because I've never been attached to the Kingdom Hearts franchise.
I had a save on an emulator, because I have the disc.
Yeah.
So I got the BIOS out of my PS2 and I ripped the ISO from the disc.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been playing it on an emulator.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know, 10 hours into the game. And I'm like, hey, I'm going to start streaming this. So I've been streaming it. Like I streamed it a whole bunch last week. And like everyone in channel, like Revan, has been like, not guiding me through, but like commenting on like, oh man, I remember this. And this part was awesome and stuff like that. And it's been a lot of fun.
Nice. Do you, Are you a Kingdom Hearts guy? Do you like Kingdom Hearts?
I played them both, so I mean, it's not like I was diving in for the first time.
Okay.
The combat's super fun. The story is convoluted as all hell.
Is it fun? I don't know. I just never dived into it, to be honest.
It's really fun. I mean, I can understand being put off by the whole Square Disney thing if that's not your thing.
Yeah.
But the combat's super fun, especially in the second one. Like the first one, the camera's kind of wonky because you control the camera with the shoulder buttons.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, instead man. Of the right analog stick.
Remember when games did that? Fuck.
But they changed it in two, so it's a proper 3D camera.
So do you have to play one for two to make any more sense than it probably wouldn't make anyway?
Not really. I mean,
like, okay, it's like I try. Like I had never played Kingdom Hearts, and so I decided to try it one time, and I wanted to play the first one because it made sense not to hop into the second one first. And yeah, like those camera control, I could not fucking play that game. It just was so fucking bad. They're coming out
with the PS3. It's like Kingdom Hearts 1.5 HD Remix Ultimate Summon Edition Squared. And
right, but see, the problem is that I don't want to spend more money on that game.
Nice.
My point is, you could probably get it cheap in a few months, and they changed the first game so it controls like the second game.
Okay.
So okay.
That's something at least.
It includes like two of the other games in the series, like Re-Chain of Memories, which is like a 3D remake of the Game Boy Advance game, which is kind of weird because that was basically a card battle game.
I think we've talked too much about Kingdom. All right, so moving on.
Well, Kingdom Hearts is great. The story is dumb. I like randomly had one of the, because you know each level has its own story because they're all the Disney movies.
Yeah.
But like every so often, as you move on through them, there'll be like a Kingdom Hearts story cutscene, and I watched one of them the other day, and I was like, "The fuck is going on? I had no idea."
Anyway,
why is Hayden Panettiere in this video game?
Who?
What?
Hayden Christian?
No, Hayden Panettiere. The actress. She's the voice of one of the. Yeah, the cheerleader from Heroes.
All right. Skype is being really weird right now. I don't know what to do about it. We can...
We can keep talking about Kingdom Hearts.
We can keep talking about Kingdom Hearts, but it does sound terrible. I think we might pause the recording. I think
it's just Skype.
I think it's everyone's Skype. We can pause the recording and get someone else to host it, because I'm hosting at the moment. We'll see how that goes.
Everyone else is fine.
Yeah, I'm gonna close the call. I'm going to cut this recording, so listeners out there, we'll be back in a second. All right, we're back. So thanks for that.
Welcome back to the Scotchcast, your weekly Kingdom Hearts 2 podcast.
So I
guys,
guess
gonna... somebody actually spent the time making a DX10 mod for Aliens Colonial Marines.
Oh God, why would they do that? That game is...
I know.
Paid off.
Have you seen the GIFs about that game?
Well, no, it's not it. It's like the graphics of it were very good. That's not the issue with the game. Well,
were we looking terrible. At the same game?
Maybe he's been looking at the screenshots that were out before the game was actually
released. Oh yeah, probably.
Yeah, there you go.
My main issue with the game was the fact that the aliens would just stand in front of you dancing.
There was one video where I think it's a stealth segment, and you literally watch an alien on its hind legs go round a corner, go past the point of view, and continue down the hallway. On its hind legs, just like walking like a dude in a suit. I didn't even think of that game.
Was the end scene from, I think, like Spaceballs, when it's like, "Hello, my baby. Hello, my honey. I can't sing anymore, or else we're gonna have to pay people money."
Fuck, I want to watch Space Jam now.
No, you don't.
All the Jeff Gerstmann reading that book stuff made me so want to watch that movie, because that movie was awesome. I don't care what any of you say.
Terrible.
That movie was great. Space Jam was the best.
Bad movie.
Anyway, so I've been playing The Room, like Brad Shoemaker and Vinnie Caravella, and that was fantastic.
iOS fame?
Yeah, of iOS fame, iPad. I got it for $1, but I think it's back up to $2 now, and it was so good.
Oh, speaking of iOS games, I was looking at, because the Boston Indie Showcase at PAX East this year is like all iOS and Android games, like all mobile games.
Right.
And Space Team is going to be there. I cannot wait to play Space Team with random people on the floor at PAX.
That's pretty cool.
That's going to sound pretty awesome.
My problem with Space Team is I'm bad at Space Team. And I don't know.
I don't have I don't have an iOS device, so I've never played Space Team.
I have it downloaded, but I have yet to actually play it.
Like, I played it with friends. Like, we actually got a bunch of people. When we, on a recent holiday, we were at a cabin or whatever. Not a cabin, but it was like a beach house. So we had nothing else to do, really. That's a lie. We frequently went to the beach. Anyway, when we weren't going to the beach, we sat down and everyone played Space Team. And my problem with Space Team is I can't multitask very well. So reading... and listening to what people were telling me to do and then shouting out what they need to do and making sure we go in a particular order or try to enforce some form of order to what everyone's shouting. I was just pretty bad at that game. So
this yeah. might actually open up something that I've like this will go in line with a question I've been wondering. And that is after watching, I think it was one of the Unprofessional Fridays, but it was the one where Drew had the PDF like laid out of how to take off in a flight sim and had Vinny fly it with Ryan doing
spectacular segment. Yeah.
Yeah. He was doing the navigator, like the co-pilot work.
Absolutely.
I'm wondering if there is a game or if you think there's a potential for a game in which that has to happen. So like the space team sort of one person's reading the control pane while the other person has to like one person's reading the orders, the other person has to execute them.
Yep.
That is happening while people are fighting off like zombies, like it's, they have to like an armamod or something where they have to get this helicopter working to take off to escape.
I think that's cool.
And there is an undisclosed amount of time because the like remaining four defenders have to hold back waves of bad guys.
I think that's awesome.
So,
and
so basically like you need multiple like audio inputs for that. So you can actually, the game can register people actually saying those commands.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I want that to happen. I want that, and that thing, that seems like a really difficult thing to make and then sell, but I just think that would be a great experience to be like,
yeah, oh,
like that level of tenseness magnified.
Yeah, and it'd be better if they're, because some of it can, the problem with that is that you're dealing with a cockpit, and unless you're doing significant subsets of the cockpit, it could be, like, ridiculously confusing. I think it would be even cooler if, because in Space Team, you can enable a mode where the majority of it is symbols. So you're describing the symbol to one another. That could be like an extra step. So you can have like fewer stuff, but they're, or just as much stuff, but they're all identified with symbols. So you don't have to like say words. No one has to read. It's more of like imagery identification, which is more easy for the, I believe more easy for the human mind to do than reading. Anyway, so yes, I've been playing The Room and that was great. And I recommend it to anyone with an iOS device. It's not an Android. I checked. I would have played it on my phone.
Boo.
I know. It's like every 3 months, I sit down and I'm going, dude, how much longer is my iPad 2 going to sell for as much as it's selling? Because currently, I can sell my iPad 2 for like $400, right? And I've always... Every 3 months, I'm like, I should sell this. I don't need this iPad. I barely use it for anything. I have a laptop for when I want to browse the internet while I'm sitting down at my computer or whatever, like watching a giant bomb shit. But then I realized that is essentially, it is now a console. My iPad is a console in my house. It has the same operations. I use it like every now and then on a specific game that's only available to that platform. It essentially has a list of exclusives, which is incredibly long.
So the iPad is a Nintendo console.
Yeah.
Basically.
But with better third-party support.
Okay. I'll give you that.
What else have been? I think that's pretty much, I finished a bunch of series of books, but I don't think this is... I've talked enough about... And I've already called out those books on this podcast. And then there's the thing me and Noob have been doing, but first...
Oh, jeez.
Firstly, Noobarama, what you been playing?
I've been playing Guild Wars 2, like Durin, mm-hmm. basically just leveling up my thief and doing dailies for my goal of 10 million karma points by the end of the week.
God damn.
Which I'm hoping to accomplish very soon. I'm at about 38,000.
Yep.
Asshole. Played almost there. Company of Heroes. Almost there, yeah. Basically, that's like a fifth.
Yeah,
you're basically halfway.
Uh-huh. Yeah, basically halfway. And I guess Victoria 2, where mm-hmm. the northeastern United States in my save is now southeastern Canada. I've liberated the northeastern United States from its oppressive.
It is really concerning. When he plays Victoria 2 and discusses with us in any form of voice chat what his moves and political strategies are, it's just really uncomfortable. because
building restrictions for minorities to assimilate them into the Anglo-Canadian primary culture.
We were sitting on Mumble, and he's like, "Hey, cynic." I'm like, "Yeah, what, noob?" And he's like, "Do you feel like Australia needs to be liberated from the United Kingdom?" I'm like, "What are you talking about?"
No, I never said. I just said I will liberate. I asked you when Australia was a country.
Yeah, he's like,
if you're going with the United Kingdom, technically Canada has not been completely liberated from the United Kingdom.
In his world, it has been. That's
in my world, it has
been. Kind of.
Well, in the real world, it is not.
Yeah, not
in my world, Canada dominates the seas, Pax Canadian or something like that. And you know, my goal is to liberate all of the countries in and liberate them into the freedom under the Canadian co-prosperity sphere.
The scary part is his usage of terminology. Liberated, liberate, like, it's and freedom.
Oddly specific.
Yeah.
Oddly specific.
It's weird. It's very accurate to some things that... Oh, no, let's not go into it. All right. So let's cut the fat. Let's go straight into it. What we really want to be talking about this week. What this podcast is about. So for people who have listened to us or seen us on YouTube, they've known we've been behind for quite a while. So I wanted to... I've updated the YouTube for all the Linkin Cast stuff, and I've wanted to put some stuff up there as A, because fuck it, I wanted to do a Let's Play, and B, because I kind of wanted to make it up to anyone who watches us on, or has been used to watching us on YouTube. So,
all 83 of you.
And we did talk quite a bit about playing obscure visual novels at the end of last year's Game of the Year discussions.
We started me and Cynic started talking about playing visual novels or just visual novels in general near the end of last year, I'd say. And so recently, like 2 weeks ago, we decided to play something and do a Let's Play.
Yeah.
And so me and Cynic wrote it down on our calendars. Uh-huh. So we booked an appointment to do this Let's Play.
Uh-huh.
And what happened?
So the game we chose was one. So just to be clear, you can see this now. If you're listening to this, YouTube. It's already live. We posted it to our YouTube channel, which is, I believe, youtube.com/.
Just because you can, doesn't mean you should.
Yeah, like if you find the Linkin Cast channel, which you just search for the Linkin Cast on YouTube, you get at least our channel from there somewhere, from amongst those links. And on that channel, I believe that the latest 8 videos, because it's an 8-part series at the moment, each half an hour long or so.
We sat there for 4 hours playing this game.
Yeah, and the game is...
Really? Because it felt like longer.
Hatiful...
You were only there for like an hour, too.
Hatiful Boyfriend, a pigeon dating simulator where you play a human girl in a high school where everyone else are super intelligent pigeons?
You are the only person in a world full of birds, and you go to a high school as a female Japanese girl, which me and Cynic have always wanted to do, and we never got the chance, but now we do.
Yeah.
And basically, we love blossoms between bird and Japanese girl.
Yeah, it appears like...
Not only is that sexually arousing, it's also heartwarming. Is what we found out.
Like we've discussed gear, like games in the past that have made us feel like disabled people are people too, and like broken down the barriers that exist in our society.
Love knows no bounds of age or species.
Yeah,
so what you're saying is now there's two games about love. There's Hatiful Boyfriend, as well as Trenched.
Exactly. Absolutely. If you were to spend your weekend next week, I guess, since this is going out probably on a Tuesday, I'd say those two should be amongst your top contenders. With Hatiful Boyfriend.
Hey Thurb.
Thurb's recommendation is Trench first.
hey Thurb, what's Trenched? What's that game?
Oh, I'm sorry. Iron Brigade.
Yeah. No. No.
Oh, okay. Right. I know what you're talking about. All right.
Iron Brigade. Anyway. So if you
going back,
that's essentially. So I don't want to talk about too much aside from to tell you to watch it, and I will definitely link it in the show notes.
I guess we should do like a little synopsis of it, of what we've done. So basically, for those who do not know, a visual novel is basically a choose your own adventure kind of book with pictures and sprites, and it's just usually told in first person.
Yeah.
So it's a first person account of this girl who goes to a school for
birds, pigeons. Yeah.
And there's this sort of post-apocalyptic foreshadowing that
overtones
goes on,
or undertones with, I like, guess
destroyed buildings and skyscrapers.
Yeah.
So at first you think it's just some weirdo sex bestiality game, which I'm sure to a degree it is, but
well, there hasn't been zero sex. I've put this in the show notes for the post. Yeah,
I was excited. Whatever.
I'm actually really happy there was no sex in the. So I don't want to. Let's not ruin it because there's reasons we know that there's no sex in that video game that are related to how we played that video game. But you can see it for yourselves.
You actively avoided it.
No, actually, we
had no idea what the content of the game was.
Yeah,
say that.
As we explained in the first episode, we kind of just sit down and not knowing anything about this game aside from this premise, and it went really well.
I will let you know, Shinboy, I had no idea what I was getting into when they said, "Hey, join us on this thing."
Right, I specifically told Thurb while we were recording that you want to join us on our Let's Play, and that was about the information he got.
That was the extent of the information provided.
Who's actually
until we started recording?
Sorry, was that? Shinboy?
Who's actually the one that's playing?
I'm driving.
Oh, okay. That's actually surprising.
Yeah.
It
turned out for the better, and it was because of connection issues rather than anything else, but I think it ended up pretty well. We don't go too dark on much of it, but the game itself, on the other hand, goes pretty damn dark in a lot of ways.
It goes pretty damn. It's hilarious.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. I will say there are definitely boring stretches, but that can be expected from any Let's Play. So... yeah, give it a shot. 8 episodes, half an hour each. Also, pretty much the length of a Linkin Cast. So,
but I don't want to be like that guy who's like, "Oh, Japanese people are weird that they like fucking pigeons." No, this is a parody of the visual novel genre of like the female visual novels. So it's like you play as a female all the
and surrounded by dudes. Men. Yeah,
yeah.
Anyway,
which is my dream as well.
So check that out in the show notes. And I guess we can move on from there.
Nageki-chan. Daisuke.
Nivarama, do you want to
take... What's the name of this?
This is called Hatterful Boyfriend. Hatterful Boyfriend.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I know to avoid.
What do you want me to do, Sinek?
Do you want to leave? So we're going to transition from Let's Play, what we've been playing, to news and further discussion, which Duran will be heading, since he knows what he wants to talk about this week.
I'm up for staying for the news.
Okay, cool.
And then I probably drop off.
Excellent. Thurbleton, because we need to tell us about beforehand. Do you guys need to tap out? Because we're about to go for... probably another hour or so.
I will try my best to stay in the conversation, but don't expect too much from me.
Excellent. Will just be
I'll be working on projects while listening to y'all, since I don't usually listen to the podcast. I help record.
I'm just sitting here listening to the Journey soundtrack.
So
that's pretty good.
I believe it was 2 weeks ago we sat down and something pretty exciting was announced. And now, at least in my time, it's the 17th, you guys the 16th. So about 4 more days until the PlayStation 4, we believe, will be announced. But that is not the only news that's been on this week. I believe we have some Wii U stuff to talk about. Duran, take us away. Where do you want to start?
Are we starting on the Wii U stuff? I guess we should. Yeah,
I guess we should start on that stuff. Right?
Yeah. I guess.
Man, someone sounds super depressed.
You are so excited.
Only because I know where this is going.
All this trashing with you
has not done so well sales wise.
What are you talking about?
Are you kidding me?
Surprised.
I thought the Wii U sold as well as DMC.
Actually, it did.
Yeah, exactly as well.
That sells a lot better than people were claiming on NeoGAF, because why the fuck do people go to NeoGAF for numbers?
Because
NeoGAF just pulls the numbers from fucking VG charts anyway.
Yep.
But the Wii U, like, Nintendo hasn't come out and officially given numbers yet.
Mm-hmm.
But it is believed that they sold about 57,000 Wii U's in January.
Mm-hmm. Is that worldwide? That's just in the States, right? I think that's just in the States.
Is that just in the States? Okay. See, that's the thing. Like, I would be interested in seeing what the Japan numbers are.
Well... again, I pretty much our only source for this is stuff like Gamma Sutra and VG charts and so on. Yeah, so 57,000 in the US. And I believe that the crazy thing about that is, in terms of January figures, 57,000 Wii U sold in January of 2013 and this is one of my favorite little pieces of, hey, did you know? That is lower than the PS3 or 360 has ever sold in January for the entire duration of them being out.
Well, more importantly, it was, I believe, 38% lower than what the Wii sold
Yeah.
The January after its launch.
Exactly. So it's
so a pretty significant drop.
Yeah. In fact, I believe, and I'm almost certain about this, that it sold less than the PS Vita in January by about 10,000
units. I believe that is true, yes.
Yeah. Yep.
Which, you know, may be good news for the Vita. Probably yep. not.
Well, I don't know whether that's more good news for the Vita or bad news for the Wii U.
Uh-huh.
Well, I mean, it's definitely bad news for the Wii U, no matter how you look at it. I mean, that's, yeah. that's abysmal sales numbers.
Yeah.
Considering now, all the hype the we had is, about the Wii U, we're so disappointed.
The thing about it is, though, is that a lot of people are taking, like, these numbers have hit the internet, you know, they're all over NeoGAF, they're all over other websites that mm-hmm. post numbers that are not confirmed.
Yeah.
And of course, people are taking that as Nintendo is doomed. Like, yeah. Wii U has failed.
And I don't think it has. I don't think it has.
That's the thing. Like before we were recording, Shinboy like kind of made a joking comment that, you know, I need to go ahead and ready my defense for, you know, these mm-hmm. abysmal sales.
You do.
And the thing is that the defense is actually pretty easy. It's probably the same one that Nintendo would also raise, and that is, you know, look at the launch of the 3DS. Like it also did not do very well, and a lot of that really was due to a lack of software. Like they dropped the price on it. They probably didn't need to, but they did. But really, what rebounded that system was getting some actual compelling software out there for it.
Mm-hmm. But see, it's something that I struggled with kind of all around. I agree to an extent, but you also have to look at the mobile space compared, the handheld space compared to the home console space. Nintendo has never really had any real competition, at least realistic competition in the handheld space, at least not recently, because the PSP didn't do well.
Apple is their competition at this
point. Oh, yeah, right? Absolutely.
I would say the markets don't overlap as much as people think.
I agree.
I think one has panned out to say that the handheld space in terms of dedicated handheld hardware is more healthy than a lot of people have given it credit for.
Yeah,
because I'm looking at a 3DS.
What I mean is Apple is more of a competitor for Nintendo than Sony is.
Yes.
Yeah, at least, but my point is, like, no one is really, I mean, there's a lot more software out on the 3DS than there is on the Vita, right?
Yes.
So you're going to go with the 3DS just based on the software. The thing is, the console space, the competition is there. So even if they do get that that software out, it's not like in the handheld space where they don't have any real competition.
Right.
They're going to have Sony and Microsoft to deal with.
The difference of it is, though, is that where Nintendo always shines and what keeps them going in the console market is their first-party software. That's stuff you cannot get on the 360 and you can't get on the PlayStation 3. And that's where Nintendo needs to deliver going into 2013.
I think Nintendo should just pack their bag and start developing Mario games for the 360 and the PS4.
Dude, I swear to God, I want to fucking shoot every person that has that goddamn mindset. Nintendo is not fucking... Like, this is the thing that a lot of people...
I don't know, man. This happened to Sega.
This is the thing that a lot of those armchair analysts want to say, is that because Nintendo is doing poorly right now with the sales of the Wii U, they are doomed. They're going to go the way of Sega. The problem is, what these people don't understand is Nintendo is sitting on so fucking much money right now.
Are they still?
They are not even close to doomed.
Because
absolutely.
Some analysts, we're talking about analysts here, but some analysts have quite like specifically speculated that they've driven through pretty much all of their Wii savings.
Could the strength or lack of the yen affect this?
Absolutely. I mean, the strength of the yen always affects stuff like this.
Absolutely. Any Japanese company, especially in the gaming space.
Yeah. But, like, it's funny because, like, people are talking, you know, the doom and gloom of Nintendo because of these poor sales. When Nintendo, I mean, when everything is taken into consideration, is in a far better position right now than Sony is.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Because everything else in Sony is also struggling.
Yeah, I mean, for Sony, like, everything really does ride on this next console. For Nintendo,
they can 14 billion in assets. Wii U, Nintendo.
And Nintendo can fail with the Wii U and keep going. Sony can't do that.
Well, and of the contenders, do you guys think Nintendo's doing the best for handhelds?
Oh, I mean,
that's pretty obvious.
I would say yes, because it is still the place to get a compelling gameplay experience.
I disagree.
I want you to be quiet over there, Mr. P4 Golden.
This is my problem with it. It's like Nintendo has the largest breadth and largest number of titles to get on the fucking 3DS.
But I am not going to sit here and listen to you tell me that
I
the
do
Vita
not
is
want
more compelling than the 3DS because it has Persona.
I don't want a Mario game. I don't want any of that shit.
I don't know. The idea of one unified account with PlayStation.
When it comes to handheld gamers, you are the minority.
Yes, I am the minority. So
I want the Pokemon XXX like, and YYY.
Yeah.
You get this way, Cynic. Like, the most compelling piece of software for the Vita right now is a fucking PS2 game.
Yes, but well, is...
So look at it this way, Shinboy. Now that Nintendo's going to fail, that Pokemon game will be out on the Vita too.
Oh, man.
So, just to be clear, and I'm thoroughly disheartened by this, Persona 4 Golden has only sold like 350,000 copies worldwide. It is like... not a failure. Because they weren't really expecting much from it, but... Yeah, there's only like 400,000 Vita.
It's a pretty niche title. Let's be real here.
But aside from that, like Vita has what I want, which is like long length, deep experiences, which are like not essentially associated with long standing.
See, here's the thing though. Like,
that's what you want in a mobile platform.
Those are the experiences I want, but not on a mobile platform. I want those on my couch.
No,
I
agree. Feel like, those on my computer. I feel like the PS Vita isn't something you take out outside, but more like you go on your couch to play.
Yeah, I play my Vita on my couch.
Right? Oh, you know what else I can play on my couch? Friggin' PC games if I have it hooked up to the TV.
Oh, fuck, I hate that. Like, oh, well, yeah.
I could play my PC games or I could play my PS3 games. Like
on your bed?
That type of gaming experience to me is not intended for a handheld. And I'm not saying that you can't have them. I'm not saying that Fire Emblem is necessarily, you know, a terrible game for handheld because it is such a deep game.
Yeah.
I'm just that, like, I'm not looking for console. I'm not looking for the console experience on a handheld. And I think a lot of people aren't, which is why the Vita is struggling like it is.
But also, correct me if I'm wrong, because I haven't really played that many of them, or any of them, really. Isn't Fire Emblem, though, sort of structured so you can play it in chunks?
Yeah, and so it's Persona. Very mission-based. Yeah, so is Persona. It's like, what were we talking about?
Well, the thing is, Persona had to be adjusted that way to fit the mobile platform while, say, something like Fire Emblem.
No, Persona pretty much Persona.
Persona was that way, but unintentionally. It wasn't ever intended to be a mobile game.
Yeah, but my point is, with the Fire Emblem games, to, you know, say they're, I mean, this is not a really good comparison at all, but say it's Nintendo's rebuttal, as in it's their deep experience on the handheld.
Yeah.
They're built that way from the ground up and have been for years.
Yeah.
And, to some extent.
But Persona aside, like, the games I want on my Vita are full-fledged games. Like, I'm really looking forward to the Final Fantasy X remake, which is heading to Vita, and I cannot... I'm
actually looking forward to that, too.
Yeah, and, see, and the thing, there's going to be more like that.
Again, another PS2 game. Like, I want to see, like, compelling Vita-made games on the Vita, and we still haven't seen anything.
Exactly. Yet. And the crazy thing was, recently, a follow-up to the Devil Survivor games has been announced with 3DS, so I'm certain to buy a 3DS this year, which is kind of crazy because I wasn't expecting to.
Too, like,
I want to get one soon so I can get it before PAX.
Right.
The thing is too is like bringing this back around to
true Love Plus is on the
PlayStation
DS.
Talk with the PS4 announcement right around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see Sony spending a lot of time talking about Vita this year.
Yeah, neither do I.
But that's going to be really, really unfortunate for the Vita because I think that this year is when they need to prove that system to be something.
Well, I don't know it's about really that.
Unfortunate for a console.
Unless I could see them talking about the Vita a lot if they build the PS3 to interface with the Vita a lot.
I think that's what Thurbleton was about to say, right?
I'm sorry, PS4.
Well, I mean, this is based off of that leaked thing that Xbox had like a couple of years ago, but they were like Xbox is presumed to be pushing a lot for external devices like the weird video thing we saw at
that whole Project Glass thing.
And so like if they can't really compete with like Smart Glass, are they going to try competing with Nintendo to try and get like the kid thing, or are they going to try to get their like battle Microsoft and be like, we need to have external devices? The Vita is sort of set up to be like that, so there's the potential for them to try and pull that off.
The problem with trying to put something like that kind of as a forefront, bullet point thing for the PlayStation 4 is that initial barrier for entry of the price of the Vita, which
$249 and no games that you really want aside from
$249 is pretty steep. Yeah, exactly. Like there's no real good games out for it right now.
Yeah.
There's only the potential of the interactions with the PlayStation 3 and they, you know, had touted a lot of the cool interactions that the PS3 and the PSP would do, and right. that didn't really pan out for them.
Well, I mean, so, we're going to get to this later when we, you know, dive into the PS4 stuff, talk yeah. Deeper. But do you see them offering a bundle with both systems?
No, God, no.
I strongly doubt it.
What they might be working on is platform unification through like software rather than hardware. So like,
yeah, your
PS account will have more to do between the two platforms.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you already see that now with the Vita and the PS3. You have a lot of cross-play stuff happening now.
So back to the Wii U, like, what do you guys think they could change? It's going to fail. Nintendo's done. Because...
Well, all they need to change is get software out there.
All these games that they're announcing and talking about, they actually have to release them.
Yeah, and Nintendo's done a pretty good job for it.
That's what I keep saying. That's why I keep bringing it back to the 3DS, because it's the same thing with the right. Wii U. Like, the 3DS, back when it was really struggling and people were talking about, you know, oh, God, did Nintendo... Are they, you know, struggling in the handheld market where they've always kind of reigned as king? And then they came out and, you know, they did their price slash, which I don't think they're going to do with the Wii U. I'll be really surprised. I think a lot of it depends on what the new consoles come out at, but I'll be surprised if we already see a price slash on the Wii U.
Mm-hmm.
But they're, you know, they've come out, they've talked about all these new games that are coming out. They're going to talk about more of them at E3. And as we see those games come out, you know, in, you know, Q3 or Q2, Q3, we will start seeing Wii U numbers go up. The thing I'm not sure about is, will those numbers go up to a healthy enough amount prior to launch of the next generation?
Exactly.
Console? And like, if they don't, then Nintendo might be in a bit of a hard spot.
What I'd like to see is like them pulling the indie developers and pushing a lot for making use of that, like the things that can only be done on the Wii U with a like game controller. And this is an example that was like made a long time ago on Penny Arcade. I wasn't sure if it was a poster or one of the comics, but this like literally translates to a game we were just talking about. What if they talk to the people who made Dungeon Land and put that on the Wii U?
That'd be so great.
That would be perfect.
Yeah.
And I don't know what engine Dungeon Land was made on, but I do know that one of the things Nintendo had come out and said, and Nintendo is, they've said, they've been very out there about like they are definitely wanting to support the indie developers. And in one of those announcements, like they announced that there were, you know, a few different game engines that are being supported natively on the Wii U, one of those being the Unity engine.
Right.
Which That's is pretty cool. a very, very popular indie engine to work with.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that definitely is a very smart route for them to go down. However, I feel like the only way that they could really succeed going down that route is if Microsoft and Sony fail as bad as they did in the past with their PSN and Xbox Live Arcade stuff, which I
don't think they will.
I want to hope that they don't.
Like, yeah, I could see Microsoft doing it again. I doubt Sony would, because Sony's actually been
pretty damn cool.
The better of those two.
But that's the thing, though. Like, neither of those systems were built into those systems from the ground up. Like, they were never intended to do that. So I think that, like, with these next consoles and having that stuff kind of known ahead of time, I think that they will both do much better than they did in the past. So again, that makes me question, like, is that a route Nintendo can go and be successful at?
I think it all comes down to your previous point, which was, because I guess we kind of beat around this bush for a while, but this is the sales figures now, and as all things indicate, things tend to, I believe, taper down in the April months or so. Like, it's just like a downward slope for the next couple of months, and just in general,
yeah, this game spring purchases, is not right? the best time for games.
Yeah, and so we're talking about that, and then it's E3, and then it's console launches. This is the last period for Nintendo to prove itself to people who might be just free radicals, who might just go anywhere with their console purchases, because they'll always get the Nintendo faithfuls. You always get your Durins and etc. buying it for those awesome.
Oh, I would not call myself a Nintendo faithful.
Well, you bought it for the Nintendo games, really. Right? You bought it for the Marios and the good Nintendo, inverted commas, Nintendo games that are coming out over the next couple of years.
Well, I mean, Duren, would you call yourself a person who gets as many platforms as he can?
Yes.
Okay, so those
people. Right. So you get those people, and you'll get the people who buy it for the Marios, and that's that. Those guys are confirmed. Those are in the box.
I bought a Vita at launch.
Yeah, so...
I buy every...
So you get those, but... these are the last couple of months for you to prove yourself for the free radicals. And
yeah, I think
these release dates games they've announced are not in the next couple of months. They're at the end of the year and the year after.
I think the biggest problem...
Some of them are, yes. I think what needs to happen with Nintendo is Nintendo needs to own the summer.
And they don't...
Like, they need to get some games out there this summer. Oh, I mean, to some extent, like there are some things that are coming out around those times that could be compelling enough. I mean, I know like Pikmin's a big one.
The big one, yeah.
That could be a system seller for a lot of people.
Yeah.
I think Wind Waker HD is early fall, late summer.
Was that? Okay. Is that this year? Okay.
I think so. I think that was like October or so. Mm-hmm. So I guess maybe like late fall then.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, like they need to regard, like even if it's on the digital front, like they need to get some compelling stuff on there this summer when no one else is doing so because they're getting ready to launch consoles.
Right.
Because, I mean, if you look back at the 360 launch, or more specifically the summer after, that was really, like, they did well at their launch for the most part, but they didn't really have a whole lot to play. But over the course of you know, that following spring and summer, that was really where the 360 kind of got its foothold in before the PS3 came out and, you know, they had some real competition. And Nintendo needs to follow down that same path.
This is the proving
time. I'm
worried
that they may not.
I strongly doubt it. So we can move on to, I guess, the bigger news. How do you want to approach this? So 4 days until...
I say we just dive in.
The PS4 announcement. Do we start with... Well, just to be clear for everyone out there, looking at the NGP-esque leaks that are coming out for the PS4, this was recorded on the 16th of February. So if there's any leaks that happen after then, between now and the 20th, sorry, we won't be discussing it here.
Hold on. What day of the week is the 20th?
Unfortunately, we can't tell the future.
Yeah, Wednesday, I believe.
20th is Wednesday, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, damn it.
It's Wednesday evening. Yeah, it's like 5 p.m. New York time.
We do
our best to tell the future, but it turns into a 4-hour podcast of people yelling.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Maybe you want, but we're not going to. I don't think we're going to do that today.
I was thinking about going into the city. I don't know why, because I'm not going to get into the event. I don't know why, because I would not get into the event, but I was thinking about going.
Just to be around that area.
Yeah.
And hang out with Jeff Gerstmann.
Just by my side, like, hey, you know, get me in, right?
I so envy the people who are going to be at the event. So there have been leaks that have led up to this event, and they've been discussed on essentially every gaming site out there, because this is the news, right? So which ones do you guys think are interesting?
I agree with Shimbo. I think we should just jump right in. And like the biggest one, pretty much the only one that's been basically confirmed, is the controller.
Right.
So that we've seen
a couple
of different pictures of that controller. Actually, did you see the most recent one?
Yeah.
It's actually not as thick as it originally looked.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Like that was a bad shot with some shadowing that made it look a little thicker than it was.
Yeah.
It is thicker than the PlayStation 3 controller, but that's not bad.
It looks about as thick as the 360 controller.
Yeah. So, you know, I imagine, again, you know, anybody has probably seen the controller, so I don't think we need to necessarily describe everything about it. But there are some interesting parts about it that are, people are kind of out there, like, you know, guessing what they think they might be.
Yeah.
One of the most obvious being that colored panel at the top of the controller.
Right.
It was colored blue in one of the pictures that were...
for anyone who doesn't, so it looks like a DualShock 3, but a bit wider and a bit longer in its grips, and there's a light at the top of it, like a multicolor.
Well, I mean, I think I saw what that light was for. If you put in a used game, the light starts flashing.
I hate that GIF. It's being everywhere. So
what it most
everywhere.
Likely is, based on the color we saw and the kind of the way the glow is and everything, it seems like maybe they just built Move into the controller.
And
originally, like, people were like, oh yeah, because six axis works so great for them, but Move was actually pretty fucking good, and if they managed to build it into the controller instead of making me hold some dumb fucking wand with a ball at the tip, I'm all for that.
Because the Move actually worked really well. It just didn't have the software because no one bought it.
If you asked me what I wanted from this next generation...
How would you play Johann Sebastian Joust?
True. You don't.
True, and the game's still not out yet, so maybe it's a PS4. Anyway, but yeah, if you asked me what I wanted from the next generation, I would have said to you, I want both Sony, because Microsoft is spent, Sony to go up on stage and say, you know that Move stuff, you know the motion gaming, you know all that random bullshit, we're going to walk away from that, and we're just going to give you a pure gaming experience like you got in the 90s. That's what I wanted from them. And the fact that when I saw that colored light at the top of the DualShock 4 prototypes that we've seen, I was seriously depressed. I was like, there's no way.
I don't want to wave this controller.
But see, here's the thing, though. Like, by building it into the controller, What this means is that games can have move support if they want to, but it's never really required. Like, it's not like every game is going to have move support or is going to, you know, want to have move support. But now games have games that want to put some kind of move support in there have a chance to actually sell copies.
You know what that tells me? That no game is going to have move support.
Yeah.
Most likely, most won't. You're right.
Yeah.
But at least now ones that do, you know, they have a chance of actually selling because they don't have to worry about, oh, well, in order for people to even buy our game, they got to go out and buy this fucking, you know, $40+ piece of hardware.
Do you think that we're just going to get the same fucking, hey, you're going across this log and you have to balance it with the fucking motion shit?
In possibly, this new DualShock 4. Like, the only reason I'm not as annoyed about that as you might be is because Move works.
Move does work. I have a Move. It's excellent.
Six axis does not work.
Yes, it does not.
And so that's why, like, if I have to, if I have to in a game balance my controller to get across a log, I'd rather be doing it in Move than six axis.
Yes, but optimally, I'd rather just never do it.
Yes, the one game I could think of was Mirror's Edge that did that with the six axis. You had to balance the controller when you walked
Uncharted
across,
1,
like planks and stuff.
All right, here we go. Layer 2, launch title. For PS4.
Oh, God.
Bringing it back, man. Bringing it back. Second chance.
The only thing that could convince me to buy this thing day one, going a bit off here, because I'm not usually a day one buyer for anything,
right,
is if for some strange reason they come out and announce that The Last Guardian is a day one launch title.
That would be crazy.
Oh, God.
That would be crazy.
I will be lining up like 3 days before. Pissed
and so excited at the same time. I know I'm going to buy that game. And now
I will go out and like
that console to get it.
I will go to like Sports Authority or whatever and buy a tent.
But like, could you imagine?
Just so I can camp out.
Could you imagine how pissed some people will be? Because there are people out there that bought the PS3 specifically to play The Last Guardian.
But they were crazy people. Because it was never given a release date. Why would you do that?
I think people who have that sort of mentality are the same people who are pissed because they just like bought Aliens Colonial Marines.
Oh, God.
Pro tip. Don't pre-order games unless you are absolutely sure it's going to be fun.
Yeah, I am so looking forward to Metal Gear Rising. Like, absolutely, it's deep in my bones. I was talking about it for the hours preceding to this podcast, but I haven't pre-ordered it because I still want to be sure.
I don't want to go too much into this, but like, if the advantage of buying something early is you get like a gun that you can make a better gun in within like an hour of playtime. And the disadvantage is, if this game is bad, I've just wasted $60 or more.
Yep.
You think real hard about those like ups and downs.
Purchase decisions don't buy from GameStop. Need to be made.
Because so the only way I pre-order games like Darksiders 2, I got a really good deal on. Borderlands 2, I got a really good deal on. And I knew I was going to play those games anyway. SimCity, I got a good deal on and could play it before it came out to see if I wanted to go through with the pre-order.
Right. And by good deal, you're getting $20 back from a $60 purchase.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
And like Borderlands, I paid like $37 for. Darksiders, I paid like $35 for. So, right. I mean, I didn't pay near full price for either of those games, so I had no problem.
But to be fair, like, none of this stuff carries over to console gaming because they don't get the same good deals that PC gaming does.
Yeah, okay.
When Empire Total War came out, I bought it for $95, and that game was broken at launch. So never buy games without double checking, please.
I'd say don't pre-order.
This is something I've always wanted to have with consoles, and I know why it would never happen, but it'd be so great if it did, is if a console manufacturer just put their foot down and said, you know what? One of the, you know, mandatory things in order to release a game on our console, you must release a demo.
Oh, man. I don't know, there was that
speaker Dice who said like demos are hurting because I'm not saying he was right. I'm just saying it's worth considering is because he's saying demos are hurtful because people get the feeling of the game and they don't really feel compelled to buy it because that's all they would get before. It was just.
Yeah, that sounds like a good excuse coming from somebody who just doesn't know how to make a good game.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying.
Well, I don't know.
That's the thing. It's like
if I was a game developer,
only ever be good because if your game is shit, then and people don't buy it, you fucking deserve for people not to buy it.
So I know,
like I
see.
If I'm a game developer that wants to make money,
whoa, everyone's talking over each other. Slow down.
Shinbori? The demo for Kingdoms of Amalur convinced me to not buy that game.
Yeah. Agreed.
But that's the thing, though. Like, it shows you that game was not for you.
Here's what I like to see that I think – I'll actually float this past you guys, see what you think. if you could pay $5 to $10 for the demo, and then if you bought the full version, it was $5 to $10 off. Do you think that's a good model?
Oh wow!
Fuck no.
I don't know.
There's been some talk, like early on, like probably last year, going like talks about, you know, what this next generation could bring, and that was actually one thing they brought up was paid demos.
I think it's a bad idea.
Obviously,
that's an awful idea, because then every company would do
start it. But I think paid demos could work if they were done in a way like Thurb is saying, where you pay for the demo and basically that amount is taken off of the cost of the game if you decide to purchase it. Unfortunately, I don't think that publishers are going to be willing to do that. I think if they charge for the demo,
I think
they're going to charge
that there is something else. There's an elephant in the room that we're not talking about. And I do want to return to the control in a second, but I want to run you by this by you guys. What do you guys think if all games on PS4 were demoable, but through Gaikai?
You mean PlayStation exclusive or?
No, all games that you can buy on PlayStation 4. You can literally play the first hour through Gaikai.
So here, I'm going to take that a step further. PlayStation Plus subscribers get a Gaikai-able 60-plus minutes of, you know, demo time with every single game.
Yeah.
The internet will hate me right now, but as a person who's not going to drop $500 to buy a PlayStation device, mm-hmm. I haven't played anything on PlayStation ever.
Right.
Because they always have such a high price thing. Yeah. What is Gaikai?
So Gaikai is...
They purchase similar. Are you familiar with what OnLive was or is?
Yeah, like the streaming.
It's basically a technology real similar to that that was acquired by Sony last year. And
yeah.
Likely we're expecting that to be used in some regard in the PlayStation 4.
Okay, so I got you. Sony was going through tough straits and they bought Gaikai for $400 million, I believe it was. It was like a massive purchase at a horrible time for Sony, which made us believe that there was a strong reason why they wanted it. And to be clear, for OnLive, the reason that didn't work out, well, one of the many reasons that didn't work out, was that their system was you had to have a dedicated PC, apparently, or a dedicated rack for every single instance of a game that was playing for your entire user base, which is why it was just not a sustainable system. From my understanding, that Gaikai doesn't perform quite as well as OnLive, but that could have improved since then. And more importantly, it is essentially game streaming for acquired by a console maker, which is incredible. Like these things have always been like such a niche, small thing that no one could rely upon, because they'd have to rely upon like small companies like OnLive to set up infrastructure around the world, whereas you have places like people like Sony already have infrastructure everywhere.
Well, and to be fair, the biggest problem with Gaikai OnLive actually wasn't its infrastructure at all. It actually the system actually worked great.
Yeah.
The unfortunate part about it was their CEO was an asshat,
right?
And like was basically a man-child.
Yeah.
And threw fits and refused partnerships with companies, and has now since left the company after they reformed. So
right.
Most likely they'll do much better.
And by reform, you mean like half the, no, not even half, 90% of the employees were cut, and it's basically
most
of
the employees were cut, yeah.
Yeah.
And they were basically restructured under a different owner.
It's essentially a holding company for that technology now. But Gaikai was the happy alternative. It was the one that we got only positive news about, and apparently worked really well for game demos. And it was actually created for game demos. That was the purpose of Gaikai when it first came out. So yeah, I think it's very possible that your guys' dream could come to reality for PlayStation 4.
Well, and especially because, like, you know, currently with PlayStation Plus, you do have on some games the ability to play 60 minutes uninterrupted of the game from beginning till, you know, you hit that 60 minute mark.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that is for some games requires, you know, the extensive download of the game.
Yeah.
And it is downloading, I believe, the entire game, because who knows how far you're going to get in 60 minutes.
I think so. And it's, PlayStation Plus also has like exclusive demos only available to PlayStation Plus.
Well, yeah. But I'm specifically talking about this because, like, going back to the Gaikai thing, if they were to use Gaikai for that service instead of requiring you to download such a giant file, by having PlayStation Plus, you can go in and demo any game that is available digitally through their service, which hopefully is all of them, and be in the game within seconds. And that would be
incredible.
That'd be really great.
Incredible. And that's the kind of stuff I want. So when I saw the touchpad on the new controller, I was like, huh? Why? What are you doing?
So the weird part about the touchpad is, you know, it it makes sense that they would try to do something like this, because Sony is definitely known for mimicking Nintendo in the past, especially looking at like the six axis that was kind of thrown in there at the last second.
Dumbest.
However, the weird part about it is the size of that controller's touchpad, because the touchpad is, I mean, it appears to be, what, maybe about 3 inches long?
Yeah, 3 inches wide, an inch and a half to 2 inches maximum tall.
Yeah, so really small by comparison to the Wii U one. I don't know what you could possibly even do with that.
I think it's the dumbest thing on the system. What the hell?
But I feel like you're not even really going to see it utilized unless it is a exclusive or it's just one shitty, like...
Well, and see, that's the thing, game. Though. Like, even looking at, you know, the exclusives or whatever, somebody who would utilize it, again, it's so tiny. What in the hell would you utilize it for other than extra buttons?
So... So the developers have chimed in on the leaked controller images and so on and so forth. And the stuff we have about that we supposedly know about this touchable surface in the center of the DualShock 4 is that, aside from the size, it's capacitive. So already a step ahead of the Wii, to be honest. Fucking resistive things can go to hell. And it's clickable. Like it's got like a MacBook-esque type. It's like a button in itself. So what I think this is for is the browser on the PlayStation 4. I think this is the touchpad and mousing surface. And I think that could really work. I think if it's, even though it's that small, if it is a mousing surface, if it's primarily used as a double tap to open new windows and single tap.
Developers are still going to use that as like a shitty gimmick and it's just going to be awful.
Yes. But yeah, that aside.
It seems like such a weird... It just seems like such a weird thing to put on the controller. Like they wanted to put like they saw the Wii U and they're like, okay, we have to do that. That's a really neat idea. And then they're like, but we don't want our controller to be that big.
We don't want the Wii tablet. As
what if we
controller?
Just make the screen smaller?
So it's not a. I know you're not really implying this, but just to be clear for the audience, it's not a screen per se. It's you can't. It doesn't. We believe it doesn't have any display functionality. It doesn't seem to.
Yeah, we don't know for certain.
Yeah.
On the pictures they showed, there wasn't anything on there. However, it very well could.
It could be. Yeah. If it's not a mousing surface, I think it's one of the dumbest things I've ever seen in a PlayStation 12, along with Move on your controller. God damn. Chimboy, do you have any thoughts? Would you use a 3-inch by 1.5-inch mousing surface or touch surface on your DualShock 4?
I talked to Durin about this, about what I think that's for, along with the little speaker that's right underneath it, or what appears to be a speaker.
Yep.
The only thing, its sole function is that when you turn on the system, the logo shows up on the screen and the little speaker just goes, PlayStation, and that's it. That's all it does.
I'm actually hoping that it's not a speaker. I'm hoping it's a microphone.
Because it looks like a speaker.
Because from the second shot, the one which was released, I think yesterday afternoon.
The headphone jack.
It's got a headphone jack at the bottom.
They need to be really careful with that because if you stick a microphone on a controller, you're just going to hear everything you press.
Well, if it's a Beam microphone, it could be really awesome. Like just a very narrow band microphone, which only takes like 10 to 20 degrees of input, because I'm sure if you guys listen to the latest tested podcast,
you said it could be awesome, but it all depends on how you hold your controller. Like,
yeah,
that means you have to hold your controller
facing
very
you
angle.
And yeah,
that's really dumb.
It could be really bad.
It really kind of looks more like it's a speaker.
Yeah, it could be a speaker,
or it could be for the PS Vita, when the game, this game where you can like rub the boobies of a girl and then you could use your fingers to touch your boobies. It could be like that.
Speaking of touching, what do you guys think of new analog sticks?
I hate them.
They look weird.
They
don't look comfortable.
No, they don't.
So people have been asking for, what do you call them? Convex? The one that the 360 has? So denting inwards,
yeah,
I believe it's convex.
Concave?
Concave. Yeah. Fuck, I'm such
think of it because it caves in.
Yeah,
and this seems like this is like Sony's response. Like, okay, we'll make them concave, but they're still convex because we're Sony.
Yeah, so the normal DualShock 3 is what we call convex. It's just a big dome kind of shape, and I love that.
Which is really easy for like I love my DualShock 3. I don't like those because it's super easy for my thumb to slide off.
Yeah, and that's the major thing. So the 360 has always had concave sticks, and people have always been asking for concave sticks, or for a long time people have been asking for concave sticks on the PS3. So what they've done is they've kept it convex in the center, but have like a ridging around the outside. It looks like a rolled up condom. Like if you haven't popped out the condom yet, like full even rolled it out entirely, it kind of looks like that.
Yeah, you know what? I can see that. I can see that.
Yeah, it's kind of like that.
It kind of looks like a third party controller.
Yeah, it definitely looks like
the whole thing does.
Well, that's because it's a prototype. I assume that the fit and finish on it will be significantly better going on.
So the next thing I want to bring up is probably one of the most important things.
Oh, but about just, the, just like, firstly. My reaction to the sticks, I think this is potentially a happy medium for people like Shinboy, where the things, his fingers slip off. For me,
I don't know.
I really hate to touch it. Because the 360 sticks actually hurt my fingers. Like when I'm playing a character action game, like DMC, after I've played that for about 5 hours in a row, which I am known to do, it really does hurt my fingers on the thumbs because it digs in more because it is concave. So I'm worried about that, but yeah, as you said, we have to put our hands on it.
Yeah, exactly. It seems like I could see how it could potentially maybe be more comfortable, but mm-hmm. I just don't know. Like I'm a Shinboy. I prefer the convex or concave. I mean, going on to the next kind of big change, it seems like, to these controllers, the shoulder buttons on the back. There are reports coming out that it seems like those shoulder buttons, based on pictures that have been seen and everything. That the L2 and R2 buttons may actually be more like the spring-loaded ones on the 360.
Yeah, and everyone claps.
DualShock hand.
Let's pause. Yeah. That's the sound of people clapping in the distance. Yes, thank you. Finally, you don't have squishy bullshit.
That's another thing where my fingers slide off if I hold them for too long.
Same. Actually, that I agree with. I do slide off.
They're just incredibly uncomfortable to hold.
When I played Gran Turismo, I lost a race because my finger... I'd been sweating because it was a close race, and my hand sweat.
Racing games are the worst, like Trackmania with a DS3.
And you slip off, and you just get so pissed. You just get so pissed. Anyway.
So like, don't get me wrong. Like I prefer the shape, at least for me,
Same.
The shape and feel of the DualShock to the 360 controller, especially the way the buttons and everything feel.
Yeah.
But the sticks, like anything that's basically analog, the triggers and the sticks, just ugh.
I like the sticks. I hate the
360
triggers.
All around. Like the controller of the 360, I feel, is a much better controller.
And I think you are probably more indicative of the general U.S. populace. I think a lot of people in the U.S. share that. They just like the 360.
I think so.
I don't know what that is.
I think a lot of it is actually not so much maybe the buttons as it is like the contour of the controller.
Maybe.
Like how it fits in your hands. To me, it's a bit more comfortable controller to hold than the Shock is. So some of that with the DualShock is just its size. It's a small controller. Mm.
So yes, it is.
Are you guys happy that this one looks to be like I think about 10 to 20%, maybe even 30% larger?
If you can give me the shape and feel of a DualShock, but with better analog things and a little bit bigger, and to me, if everything comes together right, that's like, for me at least, the perfect controller.
Right.
Yeah, it seems like the perfect thickness based on these pictures we're seeing.
That's cool. So my main concern, all this other stuff aside, especially that new move stuff, is... if they're putting this much into the controller, and it looks like they have, like, there's many developers and various sites that have anonymous sources that are claiming that this is accurate to be the next controller. I don't want to pay $120 for my second controller.
Yeah, paying.
I don't think
pretty lame.
That's the thing. Like that's probably one of the other reasons why they decided not to go the giant screen route. Is this will be much cheaper than trying to buy a Wii U gamepad.
Like, even now, like a DualShock for like $50 is kind of lame.
It's pretty expensive.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like these might be 60 when they come out or something, but it's definitely not going to be $100+ for one of these controllers.
Does anyone really use a second controller that often?
That's a good point. It's like once every year.
There's not much of a need to own four controllers.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Like, since my friends and I got fight sticks, we don't need more controllers.
Right, like, I have three, so but I have one. Robust.
It's just unnecessary to have people.
Yeah, not even that. Like, if you're going to have a friend over, they're going to bring their own controller.
Yeah. Yeah, all my friends have PS3s. Like, so,
I have three. The only reason I have three is because I have one permanently linked to my PC, one to my PS3, and one that switches depending how I need it.
Right.
So.
That's great. So but I think perhaps that's a good point. Like, if I bet if Sony did market analysis, they would find that that's pretty accurate, that most people aren't actually buying a second controller. But if they are pitching for families, do you guys want to talk about their like overall message or like what, the event yet? Or is there anything left to talk about between now and then?
I mean, like, well, I think with the controller, we've pretty much covered everything.
Yeah.
For some reason, IGN's breakdown of it, they're saying there's a new D-pad, but looking at it, it looks like the same D-pad with, but it's kind of like it's kind of sunken in the middle a little bit.
It's but it's how it is now is I believe it's similar to the Vita, or some people say. I should I reach over and get my Vita? Okay, fine. I'm just gonna reach out and get my Vita. Give me a second.
It's weird that they would even change the D-pad because like that was always the best thing about PlayStation controllers. Like they have had pretty much the best.
All right, I'm back.
Let's say them or Nintendo, they both had pretty solid D-pads.
Yeah. So it is like the Vita in that for the PS3, each of the buttons on the D-pad are like their own button separated by plastic. And on the Vita, it actually forms like a large cross with them pretty much almost touching in the center. And that's essentially the change they've made for the DualShock. Whatever. Sure, it's a D-pad. If it gives me digital input in directions, that's all I need from it. I don't really care.
I guess something else we can ask about this is, if Microsoft decides to change their controller, I mean, that we will have effectively three main controllers, not counting Nintendo, but we'll have like the new Xbox, the new PlayStation, and the generic old Xbox that's used for computer console, like controllers.
Sure.
Like, do we think there's going to be a change in the standard type? And do we think that PlayStation's, at least this model that we believe to be the one they're going to go with, do we think that's going to be a contender for the type, or is like the new Microsoft just going to win again?
Well, see, I don't know. Do you guys think Microsoft is really going to change their controller that much?
I think they'll change it to some extent, but probably not more dramatically than Sony did here.
Or do you think they'll bring back the Duke?
Duke? I think that's something they have to look at too, and that's why, you know, Nintendo can afford to go crazy with their controllers, or maybe feels like they can, and Sony and Microsoft don't, is you have to look at, you know, cross-platform games. If games you know, are going to be released on both platforms, their controllers have to at least in some way mirror each other. I mean, they can make, you know, these slight changes to analog sticks and to D-pads, and, you know, maybe even add this little touchpad in there for some basic functionality. Fucking that stupid isn't required. Functionality.
Yep.
But like when it comes down to it, like they still need to have the D-pad. They still need to have the four face buttons. They got to have the analog sticks. They got to have the bumpers. They got to have, you know, the triggers. All that has to be there. The other thing to note about the controller before we do move on past it is the complete lack of a start and select button.
That might be on the screen for all we know.
Mm. Yeah, and that's kind of why I was mentioning earlier when Cynic said that he didn't think it was going to be a screen, it was just going to be a touchpad.
Yeah.
I think it has to be a screen because I think what it potentially could be is more of like context sensitive buttons.
It could be.
Yeah, like if you're on the main menu of the system, it brings up, you know, media, games, store, like all that'll be on that screen.
If you guys because the reason a lot of people don't think it's a screen, I actually believe with them, is that it doesn't have the refractive, the optical characteristics of a picture or of a screen. But that's all. In all these pictures, it doesn't seem to be a traditional LCD.
Fair, these pictures were taken with a potato too, so there's that.
But
you almost said OLED. Sony is all about the OLEDs.
Exactly. If you guys were in the early 2000s, which I believe most people listening to this podcast are, Sony had an awesome range of MP3 players that are about like 2 inches long that were OLED screens on them. They full on when OLED was a pretty new and burgeoning tech. They had OLED screens on them, and I actually owned one. And when it was off, you could not tell that there was a screen there. It's very possible that they're just bringing back this like early 2000 tech and having basic OLED screens.
Not even that. Sony is big into OLED TVs now.
Yeah.
Or at least, you know, at this CES was showing off a lot of larger OLED TVs.
Yeah, so it could be OLEDs on there. That's why it doesn't look like a traditional screen when pictured.
I don't know. I feel like given that there is, you know, the lack of the start and select buttons, again, those are key buttons that I feel like every game probably
needs. You need them.
So those being gone, like there has to be some representation of them on the screen.
Throw this out there. Speaking of the start button, games that when they say press start, that actually make you press start and not just like X or A or whatever. Those piss me off.
Yeah, I hate that. Wait, let me hit X.
Before we move on from the topic, how worried are you guys about the durability of the controllers now that they're adding a screen to it?
Not at all.
Because if you're one of those people,
I don't throw my controller.
But still, like, controllers should
be. If you are, throw your controller, you deserve.
That's your own damn fault.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
But at the same time, by adding a screen, like, controllers, you know, even if you don't throw them, they need to be durable.
I disagree. Like, I have owned
Gorilla Glass.
Under my desk, I have 3 6-axis controllers. Don't ask me why. I have 1 DualShock 3. And I have a Microsoft wired controller.
Straight 6-axis, not even DS3s?
Fucking 6-axises.
Those things are so light.
Yeah, 1 wired Microsoft controller and 1 wireless Microsoft controller. Aside from the battery and the wireless Microsoft controllers, these controllers have been rock solid for, like, the, 7 years I've owned them. Like, the build quality on consoles... It has never been an issue aside from the tech inside them, like the chips inside them, shit melting, is all that kind of stuff. I don't think it's really a problem with this.
I think if you shattered that screen, it's because you were doing something you should not have been doing.
Really stupid. Because these guys know.
I haven't really heard of any crazy horror stories with Nintendo, and that screen is massive.
Yeah. If they can do it, Sony can definitely do it. Because, I've never been able to fault PlayStation build quality. So. Except for the latest PlayStation, which looks like a piece of trash, like complete trash. I mean,
it's like a Vita or a 3DS. I mean, like, that screen is exposed.
Yeah,
all the time. Mm-hmm. It's basically the same situation.
Yeah,
and you don't really hear of people, you know, breaking them aside from, you know,
I dropped it throwing on them. Concrete, etc. Yeah, sorry,
yeah.
No problem.
Yeah.
I dropped it on the sidewalk. If you're dropping a console controller on the sidewalk, what?
Well, and looking, you know, back a bit further for proof, like, how many times did you hear about there being problems with the PSP?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
it's been around quite a while, and that was never an issue with that either. And again, it has that open exposed screen. That's why you just don't drop it.
Well, it's like I took off my pants, but the PSP was in my pocket. I didn't know that, and then. Just by doing that, just taking off my pants and, like, moving my pants around.
I'm saying it could be done with anything.
Well, I mean, to be fair, like, you can say the same thing about an iPhone. You drop your iPhone out of your pocket, shatters your screen. Like,
I don't have an iPhone. I have an HTC, and those things are invincible.
Those things are pretty strong. but yeah, I don't think any of us are
particularly concerned. No Nokias.
So, they are no. So what's next? So that was the DualShock 4, sorry. And wait, in general, do you guys like it? I think it's a pretty decent new design.
I think it looks like they're improving on, attempting to improve on the main complaints. From the
DualShock. I think like a lot of people, I was worried when I first heard that they were ditching the DualShock and they were changing the controller.
Yeah.
Turns out those were maybe some extreme claims people were making.
Yeah.
Because this is still a DualShock.
They've made some significant departures, but yeah, it has the spirit of the DualShock still in it. It still feels like a DualShock 4. So it makes sense.
Or at least looks like it would feel like one.
Yeah. So I guess, do you guys want to talk about the leaked hardware specs? Because those are pretty important.
No, they're not.
I mean,
I think they are.
The only important one is hard drive size.
It potentially could be, but I feel like they don't mean anything until we actually see what they're capable of.
All right.
Also, they don't mean anything to like 90% of people.
And this will be revealed in like 2 days after this podcast goes up, so there's no real point. How about the DRM stuff for Microsoft? Because I want to talk the event last. The DRM stuff for Microsoft.
I think the DRM stuff is dumb. The same rumors were going around about Sony as well.
Yeah.
And then everyone just kind of collectively as an internet realized, nah, that'd be pretty dumb. That's not going to happen. And so, then like fucking weeks later, like, oh, Microsoft is going to allow people to play used games. Oh no, all doomed.
So
I feel like a week now they're going to be like, nah, that's not going to happen.
Guys, who plays games on PC? Because, I mean, why would you do that? They don't allow you to play used games. Come on.
So for these two stories, the first one, in terms of leak hardware specs, they both look like good evolutions of consoles. I believe that the equivalency here is, I think it was the 7850 in terms of graphics card, ATI graphics card, sorry, AMD graphics card. Holy shit, I said ATI.
Okay. Do we know, because I am not a fucking AMD person, never have been, so I'm not familiar with what
it's like a 560.
That's like mid-range.
It's like a 560. Yeah.
It's like a 560, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
That's a lot further advanced than I expected.
It's pretty solid. And the PS3 is the 7870, I think it was, or something. It was like the equivalent of 570. So that,
but I mean, like the 7850 is like a $200 card.
Yeah.
So go buy that.
I was gonna say, so you're telling me that my 360 or my next Xbox will be capable of doing what my PC is doing now?
No.
Well, you have a relatively old PC.
It'll actually be capable of more because they can do some fucking magic with those consoles.
Yeah. Yeah. You have a pretty old PC, so
you will never do.
Yeah, absolutely. Are we counting your new PC that you're about to get, or this one that you're currently on?
It doesn't matter because I'm not upgrading a video card. My 560 is awesome, so there's no need.
Wait, do you have a 560 or a Ti?
560 Ti.
Okay,
yeah,
that's a pretty solid card.
It's about there. Yeah. Even if it's not, like, even if it's like a 460 in there, that's still fucking spectacular. So there's no really reason to talk about it because hardware specs, they look to be awesome. We expect great things from consoles, and it doesn't really say anything.
Well, I wouldn't say they look to be awesome. They look to be what you would expect out of a console launching in 2013.
Exactly. Which is my case. It's
just like, to say about 2 years old.
Yeah. If you're, again, these numbers mean nothing. If you're going to compare rare, like pure flops between them.
Let's just say it's like 300% it's a powerful. 2-year-old mid-range PC.
Yeah.
I would say it's a 1.5-year-old mid to high range PC.
Whatever. Either way, these specs look good, and I can't wait to see them on the 20th. I want to see what games they show on screen. So that was the first one, and we'll not talk about that. The second one we were talking about was the Microsoft rumors, which were... like the PlayStation ones before, people are speculating that, or that there have been leaks, or some form of like insider knowledge, inverted commas, that say that for the next Xbox, they will have... You have to be always on to use the console, so always online, sorry, and they'll have DRM for their games. So, Draconian
and Recon is DRM.
No use games, supposedly. And again, I'm with Durin. I think that's silly. Both of these are silly.
Yeah,
I mean, you think it's silly because it is silly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, there's no way they can... I mean, and it, like people will try to argue, well, you know, PCs have been doing it for years.
Yeah.
You know, why can't the consoles? It's like, well... Because they're different markets. The PCs have been doing it for years, and they slowly, like, I wouldn't say they slowly moved into it, but they slowly moved to a direction where, you know, because
the benefits of that system outweigh.
Keys have always been there, but they had to make changes when key generators came out, and those changes had to be, you know, things to make those keys, you know, more secure.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's... The piracy in the console market is not to the extent of the PC market, and so therefore there's no reason to go that direction. And given that they have not really been moving that direction already, the closest really being like the online passes, that's not far enough along in that direction for them to suddenly say, no more used games.
Yeah. And, all right, let's look at this from the other way. If this was the case, if they did implement the solution, I actually wouldn't give a shit. I'm like, sure. Because
the only...
40% of the games I'll buy are new.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Like, for me personally, it wouldn't affect me at all. I buy pretty much everything new.
Yeah.
But the only way I could see them doing it and pulling it off, and this is why I don't think it'll happen with this generation, is in an all-digital world.
Yeah.
Once they get to a point where they completely ditch the physical discs and everything is done online, easy way for them to do it because there's no such thing as used, like, digital games.
And
like, you tie it to the account and you're done.
I very much agree with the people who say, hey, Steam's awesome, and if this was like Steam, wouldn't have a problem with it. Yeah, I wouldn't have a problem with it. But that's assuming that Microsoft is going to behave like Valve.
I mean, yeah, like the other side of the coin is, by that same thing you said, Steam has a track record of like, this is the outlook we're trying to do. We are doing our best to appease our customers as well as the people releasing these games. Whereas I've heard many a sad tale about
Microsoft.
Developers trying to work with Microsoft and just having to pay out the ass and not getting any responses when it comes to updating their games or releasing their games or getting advertising.
Yeah.
Valve has spent many, many, many years building up that trust with not only customers, but like Thurb said, developers as well. And I think they have definitely earned the spot that they're in now. And Microsoft and Sony just aren't in a position to have that same kind of trust with those developers, much less with their fucking consumers.
Yeah, because a lot of people, you know, going back to Guild Wars 2, I guess, for a second, a lot of people were talking about, oh, this game works decent enough with the controller, maybe we'll see like a console version. And I always said no, and the main reason being that games like this that have large post-release support and always need a whole bunch of bug fixing and balancing and all of that, you can't push that really easily on a console because Sony and Microsoft, especially Microsoft, go through a pain in the ass process with vetting each patch and making you pay to push patches and all of that.
Like, this is a Fez example. Fez couldn't update because I think Microsoft was asking for about $10,000 to push an update.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, ArenaNet's not going to spend $10,000 every time they patch the game.
Yeah. Oh, if they had to, then it would be lesser, like fewer patches that do more, and you wouldn't be able to get quick turnarounds and your bug fixes.
And to be fair, like, those are practices that they could definitely
change
going into this next generation, and hopefully they do.
Yeah,
I think that is
absolutely
required for their online presence to actually matter
more than it has already.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that's that. I think that the third rumor, which is the one I actually want to discuss, because I think we've made our statements on Always On and DRM, sure, we've talked about that. What do you guys think of the possibility of the next Microsoft console requiring you to always be online?
That would be really dumb.
Those kind of go hand in hand, right?
That is a form of DRM in its own way.
Yeah, like you kind of have to have one without the other. So
I don't.
Yeah.
I think that the next generation after this, that is something they could potentially do, but internet adoption rate is not quite to the point where that can be something that can be feasibly asked of the consumers.
Although I hate the people that are just like, oh man, I don't want my console to be online all the time, yet they have it online all the time.
Yeah.
Those people I don't like.
It's weird because I think if you track the number of households in America and Australia, at least, of the console and whether that's connected.
Obviously, to the top two countries in video game consumption.
Well, that's the only two we can really talk about because Canada doesn't count. sorry, Noob.
Burn.
I love Canada. I just don't like Noob. Is that so wrong? Is that so wrong?
No.
If you count those two countries, look at the households that own these platforms. The vast majority of them have them connected. I actually don't think it'd be too bad. Again, this is one of those things that if they did it, I wouldn't be affected by it. For my knowledge, Europe is equally as connected, if not better connected, than Australia is. So, and that's the biggest market for Sony, for example. I don't see it being a large problem, but I don't think it's going to happen.
For me personally, I wouldn't be affected by it, but I know people who would be.
Yeah.
So that's my biggest reason for why I would be irritated if they went down that route.
Right.
And to some extent why I've, been kind of annoyed with how this generation has handled online past stuff in general. My brother lives in a place where he doesn't get great internet connection, or didn't at the time where he lived. And so he couldn't have Xbox Live, and there were games that he would play. Like, he played, Batman Arkham City. He bought it brand new in the store.
Mm-hmm.
Could not access any of the Catwoman content because he did not have a fast enough connection for Xbox Live to access the online pass and download that content.
But to be DRM requires less of an online presence than downloading DLC. But in either of these cases, it's pretty shitty for the people who aren't connected or are in poor positions. Or many people bring up the example of, hey, if I'm moving houses and that's 2 weeks without internet, I want to be able to play my fucking $600, $400 console online, the games I have with that time. I don't want to be disconnected because I can't connect to the internet. Anyway.
Mind you, this isn't just consoles. Steam has an offline mode, but it can be wonky sometimes.
Really? I've never actually tried it.
Yeah, I've had an issue where, when I work at home, used to at least, go out randomly for an hour at a time.
Right.
And the way Steam handles it, you can go into offline mode, but a lot of times if you have to actually, set it to go into offline mode. Otherwise, it won't, load into offline mode.
Okay. Interesting. But does it work?
It's weird.
Do the games play? Like, do they play fine?
No, because you can't load into Steam.
So it just doesn't work. Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, like, you can go into offline mode, but a lot of times you have to set to go into offline mode from when you're already connected.
Online, yeah.
So you, have to prepare for it beforehand.
That's
so
pretty dumb.
I mean, like, if you know, like you said, that moving situation, if you know you're going to be without internet, it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
But if it's something that just happens, it could be, it may be an issue.
Like, people can abuse.
Yeah, it's like something simple. Like, if you, like, I've had this happen before with my ISP, if you have an outage in your area, you're locked out of all your Steam games.
Yeah. So, like I said, it's Steam handles it better because there is an option if you know what's going to happen, but it's far from perfect.
Yeah, definitely.
Right. But yeah, I doubt this is going to happen either way.
So do I.
So the crazy one I want to talk about in terms of rumors is with the light on the fucking top of the DualShock 4 and the many rumors surrounding the Xbox 360, it's looking like both consoles might be shipping with a fucking camera.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yep. Yeah.
I don't want that in my life. I don't want that.
Guys, you gotta tape over the camera so Microsoft is watching.
Doesn't see you fapping to your content. Bayonetta 2.
Oh my god. Sometimes I hate this industry.
That's on the Wii U. It's not. It doesn't count.
I don't like it. I don't want a fucking camera. Not because of Shinboy's reasons, but because I don't want to set up two fucking cameras on my 32-inch TV.
Oh, yeah. I also think it's a dumb idea because they don't work half the time because everyone's setup is different.
Yeah.
Well, but see, that's the thing, though, too. Like, with the Move built into the controller, I mean, maybe they've done something with the tech that it doesn't require the eye anymore.
No, but the thing is, like, people always complain about PC gaming compared to console gaming because, you know, a console, you stick in the disc and it works. And PC doesn't always because you always have to deal with different hardware configurations and different software and all that.
Right.
It's the same thing. Like, these things don't work because you always have to deal with different room setups and different lighting and all of that. So unless they can sell me like a PlayStation room, it won't work.
Yeah, I don't like it, man. You don't mind if they package in cameras.
No, it's not a problem to me because if I want to use it, I'll use it and I'll set it up and whatever. If I don't want to, then whatever.
So do you guys think that more developers will take... Because I personally look at this and say, this frees up a bunch of kids' games and like trash that I won't play. So I guess it won't affect me. But and the developers don't care about this.
The games won't affect you regardless.
Yeah, exactly.
The big multi-platform AAA developers not going to ever use this.
I don't see Kevin Levine going, oh god, now everyone's going to fucking connect, so let's push some shit into Bioshock Infinite 2.
I don't see Epic releasing a Kinect game for the next Xbox.
But they might. Remember, there was that Kinect game that was announced like 2 years ago at E3 that never came out.
Yeah, and it's already been officially canned.
Oh.
Yeah.
No, Levine came out and said, "No, that thing
that was dumb.
He didn't want to talk about it, but it's not coming out."
The Last Guardian Good. PS4 launch title requires PlayStation Eye. Deal Woo. With it.
It's because they want to see you cry.
People would deal with it.
They keep ratcheting up the sadness until you actually see his tears, and then it knows your baseline, and that's where the rest of the game goes forward. That's how that's going to go. Emotional response in video games, yo. How about that?
Sounds like something off of
the big like creature thing sees you crying over the fact that you have to use the stupid camera, and it goes over and starts to console your character.
I was going
to
go like the opposite way. Like
Peter Molyneux fake Twitter account.
Where it's like they give you a gun and you have to like aim it at the creature like Metal Gear Solid 3 style, where you're killing big boss at the end of the game, or Left 4 Dead, for example. And the creature starts, just looks at you like puppy dog eyes. And if you shoot it without like having an emotional reaction yourself, the game goes one way. But if the camera detects that you had some emotional reaction, it goes a different way. That could be pretty cool. Anyway.
God, all my games would be so dark. I don't cry.
I would love to see like a playthrough of Nick Offerman doing a game with that model.
Oh man, Nick Offerman's so good.
So,
that'd be hilarious.
Wait, he does like that face, like that. Oh, what would you call the face he does?
The Nick Offerman? Where yeah, it's, anybody who doesn't know, the guy who plays Ron Swanson in Parks and Recreation.
Oh, okay.
That guy.
Okay. You just had like me at Meat Tornado.
Oh, man.
I don't know. It's never going to happen because they're never going to get this high fidelity of a camera.
Yeah.
But if they could get it to read really subtle emotional responses and that'd do storytelling awesome. Like that.
That would be awesome.
Over something like, say, I don't know, like Journey, for example, because yeah. I still have that soundtrack on. Mm-hmm. If it like detects a certain emotional response and maybe plays a song accordingly.
Yeah.
The soundtrack.
That would be really
something
cool.
Something subtle like that.
Yes. That might could be interesting. Neat. And that's what we were promised Milo and never got. And I still think we're quite a long way from it. But the flip side of having a camera with every console, because it looks like we're going to have that. Do you guys agree? Like, if there's a Move thing on the PlayStation and
oh, yeah, definitely. Kinect, they're both shipping yeah. with it.
The flip side of that is both will have voice detection now with every game because you'll have the cameras with your consoles. How do you guys think of that?
Oh, no one's going to use it.
No one's going to use it? It's not better with Kinect / PSI3?
No.
You're not going to shout out your Mass Effect 4 responses at your TV?
No. No.
Do you see any hardcore developers utilizing voice communication to a larger degree now that everything's built in?
No.
The last time someone tried to do something ambitious with voice communication was N-War.
N-War! I was going to say N-War too. Well done. Yeah, it didn't turn out good.
No. Oh, yeah. Binary domain.
That's true. You could say shit and fuck in that game.
Duren, any response? Do you care about voice communication in your games?
No, not really, no. I mean, it's they might make it better than it was before, but I'm not going to fucking shout at my TV. I'll just play the PC version.
And there you go.
It could use your webcam.
So the oh, God.
Oh, that's a dark future.
in the future, Omegle built into your PS3.
Oh, no.
Oh, God.
In the future, everybody can hear your screen or see your screen. Lobby.
Oh, God.
It brings up everyone.
But Skype could be okay. I wouldn't use it. I don't know.
Doesn't Microsoft own Skype?
They do, but Skype's still on everything. Yeah, so, we'll see.
I'm just saying. Brings up a video Skype call between, you know, everyone in your Call of Duty lobby.
I would not be surprised if Microsoft used deep Skype integration to a lot of their next generation console plans. I would not be surprised at all. So I guess with that, that's pretty much all the 360 rumors in a nutshell. And so we can finally move on to the announcement, which is happening in 2 days from when this goes up or 4 days from now. Thoughts? Like, we talked about this a couple weeks ago. Like, we talked about...
Okay, here we go.
Yep.
Checkerboard.
Yep.
Behind. Kazurai. Yep. Developers on one color, the light blue, and the PS4 logo on the dark blue.
Well done. And logos and names of developers.
Ridge Racer!
So, there have been a lot of scroll about three game announcements, new game announcements being made, most likely, at this event on, Wednesday? Any speculation there? Killzone's probably going to be one of them. The Most Owned Developer said on Twitter that they are looking forward to the 20th.
Game from the MotorStorm team.
Yeah. So Killzone, MotorStorm, and probably a new IP. That's what I'm guessing.
So do you guys think we're actually going to see like actual demos, or are you talking about montage?
What do you think?
Montage?
Montage?
I'm talking about... I'm thinking
they're saving the demo stuff for E3.
Dude walks out from development team, checkerboard goes black,
yep.
Logo shows up for game.
Uh-huh. And just the logo.
I feel like this is going to be a short event that is going to be, you know, they show off the console and or controller, maybe the console. I think at this point they have to do the console because of the controller leak.
Mm-hmm.
Because originally I thought it was just going to be a controller and a name.
Right.
Show off the console, you know, say what the name is. And then run montage of games, maybe have one playable there, but I doubt it. Or not mm-hmm. playable, you know, play it on stage.
Right.
I doubt it. And then after montage, screen of all of the developers who are working on games.
I'll say, I joke about the checkerboard thing. Like, I joke about the checkerboard thing, except I honestly believe, like, that's going to happen. The checkerboard with the PS4 logo and the developer logos, like, 100% believe that is actually going to happen.
So you guys,
being more than that is because they're making such an event out of it, but I definitely don't think there's going to be anything playable there.
Well, so the I know this is a Giant Bomb like related podcast, but if you check out GameTrailers.com, they've actually been putting up a
good video game site.
A 3 to 12 minute video every day for like the last week, and they're planning to continue that up till the 20th, which is pretty much surrounding the stuff around PlayStation 4. So one of them was like, for example, what does Sony need to do in this conference and all that kind of stuff. But one of them was Jeff Keighley. Is that how you say his last name? Jeff Keighley's top Captain five moments, Guido's. Like top five PlayStation moments ever. And he made a salient point there, which was, if you look at the NGP announcement, I think that's a very accurate representation of what this announcement could be like. And at that one, they actually showed games, and they actually showed, I believe, a demo at the announcement itself. So they showed the console, they showed people using it, and they actually showed software. All in the same conference. So definitely, I actually expect, if you ask me what I expect someone to be holding the wireless controller tethered with a thick black cable to a pedestal, which the console is sitting on top of, but not connected to the controller, because we all know there's a PC inside that pedestal, and that pumping out the demo. That's what I think was going to happen.
Well, it won't be a PC, but it'll be the dev kit.
Yeah, whatever it is.
It's going to be some guy from Ubisoft who speaks English with a really thick French accent.
Watch Dogs confirmed, is that what you're saying?
You know what? There's been talks about that. I think that's probably going to be the case. Like that's going to be like the ultimate fucking like blue ball moment, is like they show off the console and, you know, maybe show a montage thing or whatever. But the game that they show playable is the one we already fucking saw. And they're like, all right, guys, see you at E3.
Because...
Do you think there's, like, a new, like, Gran Turismo or anything? Like, any of the big, like, staple PlayStation franchises?
Well, I mean, like, well, E3, but will we see them at GDC, you think?
Man.
Or just the developers?
I don't know. They're going to be at PAX East, me.
I don't think they're going to be at GDC. I think that part of the reason why they're getting this out there now is so that the developers can talk more freely about what they're working on with the next gen stuff at E3. I mean, we already know like EA is doing a next gen talk, and they're not the only ones either.
If you look
I think they're going to put up the third parties to talk about what the next gen is going to bring,
right?
Rather than doing it themselves.
Like, if you look at what close to the PlayStation coming out, when Little Big Planet 1 was announced, they did it at GDC, and that was back when GDC was just starting to become a place where people announce things, because early in the 2000s. No one announced things at GDC. GDC was what its name is based on. It's a game developers meeting where they talk about game development. But since then, because sometimes press can get into talks and stuff and perhaps publish that, people realize that you can make announcements there and be listened to. And that's when people start doing that. If you look at what they did for Little Big Planet, it was just like they started publishing a bunch of the talks, like the roundtables they did. And that's the kind of stuff I think will be coming out of GDC, which would be roundtables discussing PlayStation 4, possibilities surrounding PlayStation 4 and that kind of development stuff.
Or hopefully both consoles have come out and they can talk about both consoles at GDC.
That would be fucking fantastic.
I think it could be really hard for them to talk freely about the next gen or even specifically about the PlayStation 4.
Yeah.
And not talk about what they do already know. Like, they have dev kits for the Durango.
Right.
And so it could be kind of dicey for them to talk around that stuff, and there's going to be a lot of generic information.
Yeah, and that's why I think you and I speculated that the Microsoft guys will probably have to do something between now and GDC. Kind of crazy because the press is kind of leaning the other way. Everyone's saying that now Microsoft can hold off a couple more months or whatever and get their shit together.
Because every day that passes before Microsoft announces something is another day that everyone's talking about Sony's new thing.
But as every day passes, it's also kind of works both ways, because now that once you know, like, half the excitement comes from not knowing. Once we know what the PS4 is all about, shit will start cooling off in a lot of ways. So it could drum up excitement for the Durango.
I agree, except unless we get the GDC and everyone's talking about things they're doing that they can confirm are on Sony's new machine,
right?
That maybe can't confirm around Microsoft's new machine.
Yeah, exactly. That could lead to what Assassin's Creed was like, where for a long time with that game, we thought it was a PS3 exclusive. That's just because they couldn't talk about their plans for releasing on 360. And for a while, they actually were a PS3 exclusive. Anyway, What was I going to say? Oh, yes. So, no, I've lost it again. It's on the PlayStation 4. Oh, yeah. So, for Watch Dogs, there have been leaks of, I believe, a poster representative for Watch Dogs, which will be either, it might be like a poster for like a webpage or something like that. It seemed like it could be a fake, but it seemed to imply that Watch Dogs is releasing this holiday season.
Which I find hard to believe.
Yeah. I don't.
I don't.
I mean, that could be a very easy launch title.
Yeah.
Launch window.
I would be fucking excited.
It's going to be a launch title. I really think that's going to be a launch title. It would be a strong launch title for either, if not both, consoles.
Yeah. I think it would be a fantastic move.
I don't think it'll be an exclusive.
I don't think it will.
It wouldn't be exclusive. But it would be a good move by Ubisoft. And talking about games we might see at this conference, I think it's a highly likely that we see.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, it's a Ubisoft game. It's going to be a launch.
Yeah. It's going to be on both, all the everything available then, and it'll be a launch title for these ones.
It will be a PC launch title.
It will.
And with that, unless there's anything else, that's pretty much it. It's all up to what happens coming forward.
There's the other big announcement, which we didn't talk about, which I don't think anyone besides me is excited for.
Which is?
The Witcher 3 announcement.
Oh, yeah. Oh. So
I saw that as someone who had barely played The Witcher 2, but I just got like super jacked up when I saw that.
I wasn't that impressed.
To be honest, I'm not a big Witcher guy.
Yeah, I own both Witcher games. I haven't played both Witcher games, sadly, I guess.
I mentioned before that I hadn't played a lot of The Witcher 2.
Yeah.
And the reason was not because I couldn't get into it, was because I was getting too into it and I was like, okay, I have to stop. Otherwise, I will be playing nothing else.
Because what they advertised was an open world Witcher game, essentially.
Yeah, which is like bigger than Skyrim, which is just fucking insane.
Yeah.
I know.
But it was necessarily...
the size of Skyrim or some shit?
The thing is, they have the tech know-how to handle that, or at least I like to believe that they do.
Yeah.
Because
I feel like it's a little bit ambitious for the studio they are.
I don't know.
I feel like
they don't have resources to.
If you tell me that you're making a game four times the size of whatever it is of Skyrim, I'm perfectly willing to believe you. It's when you start claiming that it's going to be as dense as Skyrim and four times the size, then I'm like, wait a second. I'm starting to doubt whether you can do that. And I don't think they made that claim.
No, they didn't. They said the only game world size.
Yeah.
Yeah. The only thing I'm worried about is I feel like that's starting to go the direction of too much game.
Or no, the way they seem to be doing their progression, at least story progression, seems really interesting. As in where they were talking about how, you know, in Skyrim you can do like five or so main story quests, get into it, and then just ignore it for 40 hours. Mm-hmm. We're talking about with this, like, if you do that, people will come back and there'll be repercussions. Like, you know, where the hell were you? All this bad stuff happened because you weren't here.
Wow. Actually,
mind you, this is just developers talking this up.
Well, if they made the game such that you weren't the Messiah / Jesus figure, and the game actually, everything in the world was happening, and you can choose whether to be part of it or not. And if you did, you could significantly affect the outcomes of this. Possibilities that could be very interesting. So like, there's a war going on. It's going to happen whether you're playing in the war or fucking spelunking in the mountains. But if you're there and you're there for specific instances, which you'll funnel you towards, if you're there, then you can change the world. That could be really interesting.
I'm really just interested in collecting the nudie cards because that's what I did in the first game and that's what I do in the third game.
But yeah,
the one thing about CD Projekt is that they're dedicated enough and have the technology enough, mm-hmm. and they don't really have to worry about a bigger publisher like Bethesda has to do with ZeniMax. They can experiment a bit.
A Steam-like credo. Like, people seem to trust
them. And also, like, saying they don't have the money or like the resources, because these games take a long time to make.
Yeah,
they do.
So the lack of people was not really an argument because the man hours are probably roughly equivalent.
No, resources as in money.
They own GOG.
Right, yeah. But GOG isn't Steam.
I'm saying.
Well, no, but it's still pretty popular. Like, and
Bethesda doesn't own GOG. So
It'll be like fine. GOG money is easily more than enough money to make a game as big as they hope to make.
When it comes to the size, what really made me love Skyrim, I think I played it in 5 days and 100 hours over five. No, it was like 6 days, 100 hours. What made me love it was the density, was finding something around every corner, always seeing something that fulfilled me. It was like quality of content and amount of content and density of content. And I don't think any developer can make a game in a reasonable time frame that's as massive as they're claiming it to be and as dense as Skyrim.
Well, I mean, reasonable time frame, we have no idea when this game's coming out. This game's not coming out this year.
Yeah, it's not coming out this year. And they said it wouldn't. This is another when it's ready, like Cyberpunk 2077 or whatever it was.
Man, that game's going to be... Oh, God. I know nothing about that game, but I cannot be more excited for that
game. I am with the Giant Bomb crew in saying I am fucking excited about the Cyberpunk game, more so than I am about the Witcher's game. Even though the Witcher is built upon a very well-respected franchise, that Cyberpunk trailer, even though it was entirely CG...
Right?
Exactly right? My buttons. No, it knew how to push my buttons.
Oh, God. let's get off. I can't talk about this anymore.
And with that, anything else? That's pretty much it, right?
There was something else.
There's March of the Eagles that's coming out.
Oh, I'm also going to say that Bioshock Infinite, because Darren and I were talking about, they had a new trailer come out yesterday, another one of those 80s-style ones. Mm-hmm. Just going to say, as a whole, that game has had amazing trailers.
Nice.
Between those two, Beast of America trailer, the City in the Sky trailer, they were all pretty great.
Giant Bomb has had their site be rebuilt. It looks kind of pretty.
The main page is kind of eh. Wiki pages and user pages look
awesome.
Everything's
too big. It's just big.
Yeah. The vertical space, the main page, the landing page takes up is I'd say pretentious. It just takes up too much
space. No, the only thing I don't like about the main page, if they added forums back to the front page, I'd be perfectly fine with the front page. It's just, I don't know, I think that's iffy but can be improved upon. I think wiki pages and user pages look fantastic.
I'm not a fan of the new forum design.
Why are they aligned to the left? Why?
Even that. It's just like the colors. I have it on black. Do you guys have it on white or black?
Oh, obviously.
Yeah, I have it on black.
Yeah.
White. I think we're actually... I'd be surprised if you find another room of people who all have it on black. But...
really?
Yeah,
I don't know anybody who has it on white.
There was a poll that someone made on the forums, right? The day or so after the new site launched.
70% black.
Which color do you have it on? It was like 90% black.
Yeah. But fuck yeah. I love the new coming up section on Giant Bomb with the little images and stuff. Like the grown man in his underwear tells you about Destiny. That's going to be awesome.
Yeah,
Destiny sounds awesome.
The article that Brad posted pretty much saying I posted this just to screw around with the formatting and stuff. That article looked great with the big picture because I feel like it's like polygon light, as in there's big images, but they're not too big.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the site is so much light. It runs so much better than polygons. So I'm happy about that. Aside from the fact that you get error 500s everywhere all the time.
That'll slow down.
Yeah, that'll cure itself. Anyway, how about Destiny, guys? What do you think Destiny is?
A first-person shooter.
Because people will know. By the time this goes up, people will know what it's about. So,
Destiny being Bungie's new project?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, first-person shooter.
First-person shooter? I think it's going to be open world.
An MMO-FPS.
MMO?
So basically... the game is going to be called Destiny, right? And the main character you play, you are like the hero of this world. And there is something just called Destiny. It's like this big omniscient thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you are its chosen. You are the child of Destiny. You are Destiny's child.
Oh, boy.
And it's topical, too, because they're back. We all know they're back. Yeah, no, first-person shooter, I actually suspect that, I think it might be an MMO. If it's an MMO, it'll be PC only, so I don't think it will be. I think it'll be a next-gen console.
If it's going to be an MMO FPS, then yes, it's going to be PC only.
Yeah, so it's going to be a next-gen console, probably single-player game with multiplayer elements, Halo-esque.
Actually, that's sci-fi. Not true. That Dust 1 or 4 or 15 game is going to be console only.
Yay, Dust, whatever.
Let's see, we're just going to...
But the thing, the only people that are going to be playing that game are Eve players that just play for ISK or whatever
for
it's called.
Eve reasons.
Anyway,
actually, no, that's not the only people. I know people who have friends who play Eve, and they will be bankrolled by their friends who like
Eve corporations, yeah. Right?
It's like when these new players who don't play Eve will be playing this game, they'll be bankrolled, and then this guy's been told that if he's doing bad, the buddy who plays Eve will just bombard the map and kill.
Yeah, that's how it works. God,
Eve is the craziest. I love it. I love to observe it.
I don't know.
That's the thing I could say. I love to observe.
Like, Eve. I would never ever want to play Eve, but I love hearing stories about Eve.
I feel like it's one of those games. If you start playing and you really get into it, it's even more addicting than the most
even more. Get it?
Yeah.
Durin, do you have any plugs?
Oh god.
Just going right in the plugs.
I need to end that. Durin, plugs?
I don't even know anymore. streaming something. Twitch.tv/Durin. I don't know.
When are you going to play Devil May Cry this week? When? What day?
You need to do that.
What day? That not Wednesday.
Do we want to do the live stream of the Lincoln Cast next week, or are we putting that off again just to best stuff still?
Let's do it.
Sure.
Let's do it. Live stream?
I assume we do it on your channel. Just like the video stream and all that.
Durin has heard of this. Yeah, Durin will have to do some stuff if it's going
to
be at his channel.
No. I have exploit going good, so it'll be fine.
Okay.
I can do it on mine.
Just never close it.
Yeah.
So, all right.
This is part of... I can't fucking wait to upgrade my computer.
So usually this is the top of the show, but if you're there, check out... Pay attention to the Giant Bomb, Guild Wars 2 forums. We'll probably be doing a live show next week.
Channel, because we'll get an email when we go live anyway. So
yeah, what time is that, Thurbleton? What time do we record your time?
Pacific, like basically game time, I guess, for Guild Wars would be 6:30. We try to start at 6, but
it's 9 Eastern for those civilized.
9 Eastern, but... 6 Pacific, but
yeah, and that's on Saturday night.
Don't worry if you're running late.
Yeah, don't worry, running late because we will too. So 6 Pacific Saturday night next week. You'll see us there.
9 Eastern.
Yep. Thurbleton, do you have any plugs aside from that?
I love forcing you guys into stuff. Like, you hornswoggled me into playing that game.
Yep.
I guess updates and whatnot. My plug will be that PC Gamer thing about Chivalry Low Gravity. I'll make sure that's like, I'll get that to send, put the links.
Yep. Get to me.
In Guild News, we're working on redoing the forum post for the guild recruitment. Mm-hmm. Anybody wants info on that? I'm trying to clean it up so it's, you know, people who have been playing this game in the past 6 months instead of people who aren't. And I'm maybe getting a short link so it's going to be easier for folks to get there. Other than that, no. I mean, like, I still stream twitch.tv/Thurbleton, but whatever.
Sure.
I don't expect people to be watching it when I'm playing it, so if you want to see somebody act silly, I guess watch.
Cool. I tuned out there because I had an idea.
tell.
I will in a second. Noobarama, do you want to plug the PC Gaming Hub?
Right. So, Giant Bomb PC Gaming Hub, come play video games with us. If you're Canadian, I wish you a happy Family Day, which is probably before, which already passed if this podcast is out. And I guess plug the
what is Family Day?
Boyfriend video. Family Day is just a holiday that you're supposed to spend with your family, so everything's closed.
Oh, okay, that's pretty cool. So nice.
Yeah.
So we both plugging Hateful Boyfriend. Our Let's Play is on YouTube right now. We've already been called racist. I've responded to him, noob. It's been
have funny. We really?
Yep. We've already been called racist. It's going to be interesting. Me, like... no, he just assumed that us bagging on the black pigeon was because it was black.
That I called you out on being racist.
I'm did, and I'm Indian, and I was like,
cynics.
That's not the reason why I hate this pigeon. It's because it's a hideous black pigeon surrounded by fucking doves. Of course, it's the ugly one.
I'm
racist, Scott. Aside from that, Durin, I'm going to commit to it right now, and whether you're there or not, but I'm going to say we're going to put up a emergency episode of the Scotchcast this week based on the PS4 announcements. That's going to happen.
Maybe on that. I'm starting we're not gonna do it on this day, so I don't know.
We're not going to do it live, but we'll do a recording that night.
Yep.
Just kind of talking about our impressions on what we saw.
Yeah, absolutely. So tune out. So look out for that. That's aside from the Leaking Cast, which is happening next Saturday. We are definitely going to do a Impressions Scotch Cast, and that's going to be awesome. That was the idea. So yeah, Hatful Boyfriend. That's all really matters. Thank you for listening.
I got something else.
Oh yeah. Whoa. Oh yeah. Shinboy.
Shinboy.
There, you can go. You can go.
Okay. Well, if anybody sent in emails about the 4-hour long Leaking Cast episode talking about just what Warby World or any of the updates that you had an issue with or wanted to chime in on, we will get to those next week probably.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, I'll plug my site, plugandplaygaming.com. One of the other guys that I do it with, he put up like an anti-chamber review. I disagree with it, but whatever. It's not my review. It's his. the cave review is still up there. And also, like I mentioned before, I am playing through Kingdom Hearts 2, twitch.tv/shinboy630. And also, I think once I'm done with that, which, I mean, I've been blowing through a level every time I play, so I'll be done relatively soon. I'm probably going to stream me playing through both Dead Space games with the lights off in this room.
Hell yeah! Ooh. So you're doing what Durin didn't.
Hey, now.
I absolutely hate scary things. It's like, gonna be awesome. All.
Yeah. That's gonna be fantastic. I can't wait.
I was struggling with some parts of BioShock.
This is gonna be great. I'm gonna watch that because I got a taste of it from Durin. I want to see the rest of that game. So if you're playing,
I'm usually pretty good with as soon as it finishes, checking the save forever box. So like if you miss the live stream, odds are like all the Kingdom Hearts ones are archived.
Right. Yes.
So yeah, check that out.
So check that out. Yeah. And again, had a full boyfriend. All this stuff is going to be the show notes. So check that out there. And thank you for listening. What was Noob's thing? Again, I can't remember it. It's have a nice day and fuck off.